All right. So we've sort of started already, but we'll just sort of roll into the main cast at this juncture. Episode 82?
182? 182, I think.
181.
No, we did 181.
182.
Week. Yeah.
Episode 182 of Mutes on Many's Musing and Amusing.
So high energy today. Everybody, let's get up and do jumping jacks.
As far as news and announcements go, there's...
Do we want to introduce ourselves as per usual?
Well,
or should we just skip it?
I mean, this is just like the people they know.
Yeah, this is... There's no one special on this cast.
It's Josh, Keith, Chad, and John.
This is the core.
Well,
you're getting the beating heart right now.
Yeah, this is three legs of the core.
Mm.
We're missing Chrome.
They call me the third leg.
News and announcements. We've now seen... Oh, wait. I'm 2 weeks behind, so a lot of the things I think are new are not.
Standard Keith.
I imagine. Well, I wasn't here last time.
Yeah.
When you showed up with that awful hat, and you're just like, look how great it is. And I'm like, that is old news.
I imagine you talked about Bradicus Thurl's model, which is gorgeous.
We did. We talked about all those things.
How ugly, how stupid the Nerif's name is.
I was trying to figure out if there was, like, such a thing in actual, like, biblical lore as a Nerif.
There is.
There is? What is it?
It's a lesser angel.
It's a lesser angel.
Variety.
Mm.
Marshall, that's what Marshall says, anyway.
Marshall is fairly knowledgeable.
He said
about
it was Zoroastrian, maybe?
Fair enough.
Well, that clears that up.
And this has been your Marshall Corner.
Yeah. Upcoming tournaments.
We found out that the countercharge sack movement thing.
We were just crazy about.
Well, yeah.
Well,
basically.
We probably could have read those other rules. That might have helped.
Yeah, whatever.
I'm actually surprised we didn't just get blown up in the forums.
For how stupid we are.
Yeah.
Well, whatever.
We admitted that we probably didn't think it would be that way, but just. And actually, we were right, as written. We were 100% correct. We just didn't read the other rules that went with it.
Usually when we're powerful stupid, there's powerful feedback.
Yeah. I'm happy to not have been part of that. So upcoming events and things. I don't know when our next local tournament is. We just had one. It was successful, I would say. It was a good tournament.
Mm-hmm.
Like 45-ish people, so it was a good turnout. We had people from as far as California, Arkansas, Madison.
Is Tom Glenn still in California, or has he moved to Arizona
he's
yet?
He's moving to Arizona come the school year.
Okay.
Upcoming events. Madison's having a tournament in a couple weeks.
Mm. Is it a regular tournament?
I think so.
Is it reggae?
Also, Jeremy Shea is hosting a mystery dinner.
Really?
I don't think that's for wide. I don't think you can just come to that, though.
But you probably should, anyway.
You should. All of our listeners should just
show up at the Shea's house.
Just ping Jeremy and ask for an invitation.
Yeah.
That'd be great.
It's a mystery dinner.
It's where you all, like, play roles, and then, like, you go on through the night and somebody's
I've
a murderer.
Done that before.
You
that
ever
sucks.
Seen the movie Clue?
It sucks? That's fun. Yeah, what is wrong with
Chad
you?
Chad hates fun.
You hate everything.
I guess it depends on the...
This is why I'm not a hordes person.
I guess it depends on the company.
I mean, if you play with somebody who's just like, I'm a murderer, like 2 seconds into it, then yeah, that's pretty bad. Yeah. I would agree that would be a waste of an evening.
I mean, I'm sure Josh would enjoy it if I was the victim.
Yes. Particularly because you would just have to be in character. You just have to lay there, and I would just teabag you and teabag you and teabag you. You're like, let me reenact where the murder was probably like, stab John, teabag John, stab John, teabag John.
She'd be worried, huh?
Upcoming events, Captain Con, Gen Con. We will have a small presence at Captain Con.
John, you and...
Nigel and
Nigelius Lawson.
Yep.
And we will probably have a small presence at Gen Con.
Are you going?
Me.
Yeah.
I think it's just me.
I might go.
I will not be there.
Me either.
Beef house.
Bring me back some rolls.
Are you going with Brent?
No, I think Jackie's going. So.
No.
I don't know. I don't know if she has a room yet or not. We're going to stay outside of town, I'm sure.
Just in the car.
No?
I mean, the hat tells me you're probably going to sleep in the car.
America's Best Value Inn is only $50 a night.
Oh, my God.
That is true. We stayed in... John, did you... Oh, yeah. We told you we stayed in one in Seattle, right? For one night. America's Best Value Inn.
Were you guys like...
It was fine.
It was a better value than the Best Value Inn. And
apparently, because I didn't stay in the one in Indiana.
It was certainly a better value than the Best Value Inn. So, not much in the way of news and announcements, I guess.
Well, we're missing Colin.
Colin is our...
News and announcements.
He's our data miner.
I mean, we could check our forums. It is only a click away.
Jesus.
Well, this won't take zero or like infinite amount of dead air time.
Yeah.
Everybody, enjoy this segment of the podcast called Click, 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 Click.
Well, then,
enjoy this segment of the podcast called Chad. Chad hums the Spanish flea.
Perfect.
Oh, we got dates for the Nova Open. We'll just announce that. August 28th through 31st.
That was something valuable. We brought you some useful information. The rest of our lives are validated.
Oh, the American Team Championship is July 12th and 13th.
Okay. Old ATC. ATC's good times.
That's... Where was that at?
That was a week ago. Murfreesboro or something like that?
No, it was in Murfreesboro last year. It was somewhere else this year.
Yeah.
So let's just roll into our topics for today. The first one that we're going to do is a new segment that we talked about in the pre-ramble.
This would be a new segment.
This would be a new segment. The idea is to take a faction and look at some easier-to-play options for newer players that are still strong enough to allow you to play competitively. Power Dojo for newbies. Something along those lines.
Yeah, just a faction pair, and then matchups. We can talk about the matchups for that pair.
Which faction would we like to start with?
I don't know. Is anybody...
Well, what's the newbiest of factions? Krix?
Probably.
Trolls?
No.
Mercs.
Mercs. It's Krix. Clearly Menoth.
We can start with Krix, since we don't have any Krix segments planned for the rest of the day.
All right.
We also haven't talked about Krix that much lately.
No, I haven't had the bug.
Because they're boring. Krix is boring. Don't play him. Maybe players don't play Krix. It's boring.
So, on a scale of which casters are easy to play and which ones are hard to play, on the easier side of things, I think P. Denny can be... Relatively straightforward.
My problem with P. Denny is it's difficult to feat and not get her killed against an opponent who's thought about that matchup.
True.
So first, John, what was your idea?
Like, here's an example of a caster, I think, in Krix that meets this criteria really well.
Well, before you even do that, like, why don't we just go give an overrun of, like, why this is even a segment?
Well, so. I think...
I like that. I like that, Chad.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
Introduction to Power Dojo for newbies.
There's a lot of new players that are moving into the tournament scene. And it's rough when you're just getting there. And I want to try to reduce the learning curve a little bit for people, if we can, by giving them some powerful lists and talk about matchups for them that are maybe a little more straightforward to play to help them get a little bit of a tournament success.
So the idea is that there's a lot of stuff to worry about in a tournament that's not even related to the to playing War Machine.
Yeah.
And so if you can give someone less things to worry about overall... You know, and just if they have a caster that's easy to play, then they're going to be less taxed mentally. They're going to be able to...
Right. And then also have a caster that's powerful enough to win games so that they can have some success.
Oh, random side note. I was talking to the Madison guys when we were at breakfast before our tournament. And they were talking about how they have a few new players in their store who, when they play in tournaments, are so slow that they don't get through their, like, third turn. Because they've only ever played on death clocks in tournaments, and they don't feel that pressure crunch. So that's an interesting side effect of death clock that I had not considered before, is that there's no speed training element to it at all. Like, the turn-by-turn pressure is just not there the same way it is at the clock to teach you how to make your decisions faster. So I think death clock becoming...
Standard, baseline.
Becoming the way to play the game in a tournament format has actually stunts the growth of newer players to some extent.
I could potentially see that. I definitely know that whenever Eric and I don't play on, like, I noticed the best growth in his game when I started to force him to play 15-minute turns so that he wouldn't be able to, like, agonize over his decisions.
Yeah, I mean, we used to tell people that if you want to get good at the game really fast, practice in hardcore times. But we never really specified.
No, we have. We've talked about this before. Where, yeah, I mean, we've even made this recommendation before. It's just interesting to see that it's playing out the way that we thought.
Yeah.
Where, yeah, if you want to get good at the game, I think is what we said, that you should always play on a time limit. And that doesn't mean, like, Death Clock, a time limit for Death Clock for the entire, like, duration of your game is way, way different than a time limit for your each, like, individual turn.
Yeah, it's interesting how hard some lists are to play in time turn versus Death Clocks. Like my Krios 1 list, the big turn can be, I've had it be a 25-minute turn before.
Yeah, and that's why I definitely prefer Death Clock as a format for competitive play, because it allows you to put the emphasis on those longer turns.
For competitive play at high levels, I definitely agree.
Right.
But as a teaching tool,
right.
it's not the same.
Right.
Because it allows you, because this winds back to the topic at hand. Because lists like John's Krios list or my Denegra list in a time turn format are crippled by the fact that sometimes you need more time than you have.
Right.
Even executing quickly to execute your turn to maximum effect. But at the same time, so it opens up, Death Clock then opens up more list varieties. But those lists, the lists that require those big long turns, are more advanced lists. So that's why I think Death Clock opens up new options at high levels of play, but it doesn't help newer players in the same way.
So we have a term. We talk about players going in the tank, where they just sit and stare at the board and think longer. And Death Clock definitely induces way more of that.
Yep.
And you don't really have that luxury in 50 minutes or 55 minutes of play or 60 minutes of play. You think you do, but you can't take like 5 to 6 minutes to start every one of your turns. You give away 20 minutes in a game, and that's a huge amount of time.
I saw Fox get screwed by that this weekend, where I felt like he had the game in hand. I felt that he had the game in a winnable state.
Yeah.
And he just but he only had 3 minutes left on his clock, and he just tanked away all three of those minutes. And
yep.
Fox is sort of an intermediate example of this phenomenon that we're talking about, because he's played a bit on time turns, but a lot of, like, it was noticeable when he started playing the game casually that he took very long turns, and he likes to think about his turns a lot before he plays them, and time turns has gotten him away from some of that, but you notice it when you go into, especially the version of the tournament that we were running this weekend was a slightly accelerated Death Clock, and even that 5 minutes can hurt you.
No, there were a couple of rounds where I was just walking around judging. We should probably talk about the tournament a little bit. And just
I have it on here.
We'll but get to it. Okay. Because I was walking around judging all day, and there was one round in particular where I was like, I would walk up to a table, watch someone Death Clock themselves, sort of turn around, walk over to another table, watch someone Death Clock themselves, and then turn around and walk to a third table and watch someone Death Clock. Like, I just was just like, everywhere I turn, there's people just running out of time. Like,
yeah. Lance did really well this weekend.
Mm-hmm.
Like, watching him play, he was like knocking Krix players down left and right. But I can tell that he hadn't played Old Witch a lot. So the one round, he had one round well in hand, and then he ended up death clocking.
Mm-hmm.
But he had all
against the same guy I lost to. Guy beat Lance, myself, and Matthew for a story.
So he had an easy road.
Yeah, fair enough.
So that brings us back around to, as a new player who we encourage to play in a timed turn environment, even just casually, because a lot of the events you go to are going to inevitably be Death Clock, and that's fine. But you need to prepare yourself to be able to take these shorter turns. So building lists for both success and the ability to learn as you play while not losing horribly. So that's what we're talking about. We're going to start with Krix.
I have a caster to throw out.
You have a caster to throw out.
Is it Terminus?
Gorshade 2.
Gorshade
2. Oh, interesting.
Hmm.
I was going to say Terminus.
Yeah, I assume Terminus. Terminus, I think, fits your criteria.
Go for it.
I think they both do, actually. But the reason why I like Gorshade 2 is he's got some innate defensive ability. He has the ability to occultate himself.
Mm-hmm.
Which, when you're a new player, it's okay just to occultate yourself. every game until you start learning the things that can kill you.
I don't think that's intuitive, though. I think that's... I mean, yeah, like, you can have somebody tell you that, but I think your natural reaction is to use your buffs on your...
Well, we're assuming they're listening to us. Occultate yourself.
I just want to take one issue with the thing John's saying, which is if you occultate yourself, you're probably not going to learn the things that can kill you.
That's also true.
But if you see other things die, like, you'll... Oh, man, that was a really powerful shot from a long ways away. And, you know, my Jack could easily have been...
A lot of people don't make those.
Yeah.
Colossals. Colossals can kill you from a long way away. Yourself.
They sure can.
And, I mean, we can talk about, like, different matchups. But the Gorshade 2 theme force is incredibly powerful. There's not a lot of really difficult decisions. I mean, you basically run forward and kill stuff, make more banes. Like, it's not a complicated game plan.
I'm just assuming this is a segment for new players, not idiots, so that they can figure stuff out.
Yeah.
But yeah, I thought I liked Gorshade too. He has some fun things. Like, he himself is not a very dynamic caster in that your caster will not be doing a great deal, but you can feel his effect on the game, which is a good thing. Like the elite cadre, which you just mentioned, it's very. If you run into that all living army and you get into the melee fight, you're like, "This is amazing!
Yep.
I basically can't lose."
You also have his feet, so it will cover up some early positioning mistakes in a game where you lose a little more than you thought you were going to. I mean, I think, and he's very powerful.
Yep,
like he's got a really good long game. And he's got good defensive stats.
Yep. So to start with, I would say it's not. I wouldn't be upset at someone if they built his theme force to start with, which allows you two units of fully decked out Bane Thralls with their unit attachments. You take a unit of Bane Knights as well, usually, or Bane Riders is also fine with him. You max out, you take as many Scrap Thralls as you can. That's your feet fodder for the most part.
Tartarus and a Kraken.
Tartarus and, yeah, a Kraken is fine.
Well, he's got
Phantom Seeker.
Phantom Seeker, and the Kraken actually is probably the best target for Phantom Seeker in the faction.
So that gives you a fairly straightforward dynamic list to play.
What matchups would you play that in, Keith?
The neat thing about, especially that Phantom Seeking Kraken, is it opens up the Signar matchup quite a bit. Because a lot of Signar players tend to just want to hide their casters behind their Stormwall a lot of times, or cover, and the worst possible Signar caster to run into is inevitably P. Haley, and the Phantom Seeking Kraken just sort of shuts her down.
Yeah,
it's like, get out of here, get that Temporal Barrier out of here, I'm going to shoot you in the face with this Pow 16 gun over and over and over again until you go away.
The other thing that I really like about that Gorshade list is a Kraken is a really powerful piece if you can keep stuff off it.
Mm-hmm.
And he's got a screen that just never goes away. Like, it is really hard to get to that Kraken. You can engineer it, but if you spend all the resources to get to the Kraken and even kill the Kraken, you're probably going to get run over by Banes because it's such a requirement of, like, a projection of force mm-hmm. and resources. I see a lot of games toilet bowling after they kill your Kraken.
Mm. Another cool thing about Gorshade 3 that is advantageous to a newer player... That is advantageous to newer players, that he teaches you one fundamental for Krix that translate, or for him and his feet to function, that translates to a lot of other Krix applications, and some applications in other factions that use recursion, that you cannot let an entire unit get wiped out. And it's easy with the Bane Thralls because they have standards that hang out way in the back and are stealthy, so it's hard to lose them. But then once you get practice at that idea and can do it successfully with those stealth units, you can translate that principle if you can untheme his list as you move up, and I think that makes it a little stronger. Pull out one of those units of Banes and incorporate Black Bane's Ghost Raiders or a Mechanithral engine. With, like, some Blood Witches, something along those lines. And then, like, because the cool thing about his feat, as you use your Banes to generate more Banes, as you use Tartarus to generate more Banes, the ones that get killed are still eligible for the feat. So you can get this, you can get a giant Bane Ball going, and then you may lose them all as the game goes on, but if you can generate Black Banes and Ghost Raiders are Mechanithralls, you can convert them into Banes later in the game to rebuild an unbeatable pressure.
Might be more interesting to talk about what you don't think the list can be played against, or what you would want to avoid playing against it, because obviously, you kind of salivate again when if you face a infantry heavy like living army across the table, and like all Crix lists since they have built in POW 13 weapon masters, like armor is not usually a problem either. So, what sort of armies would you be concerned about playing with this list?
Well, the nice thing about Gorshade 2, if he stealths himself, he's very hard to remove. A 15-16 stealth caster is about as good as it gets for assassination resistance outside of some Hordes factions.
Hordes people.
Them Hordes people. But a wealth of stealth-ignoring guns can whittle you down before you can get there, because Banes are not particularly fast on the approach. They're speed 5, so they're going to run 10.
12-15 is not a particularly
exciting stat. The guns can target you.
Yeah.
I think you can still drop it against Signar, though, because they have the most stealth-ignoring guns. Because of tough checks, I don't know that they have enough a volume of attacks to get through all that. Now, Thunderhead probably pretty good against you, so... Yeah.
If it's Epic Kane with gun mages, you're probably going to have a bad time.
Yeah.
Especially since his feat triggers a lot of RFPs. If you run into anyone with a wealth of RFPs that work against undead, it's going to be bad. But again, that's pretty rare. So Cassius would be a bad matchup in Circle.
A high amount of high power blast damage. So certain Menoth armies could potentially be an issue. For the same reason that a high amount of stealth ignoring shots are.
Yeah, I think a game there.
That gives you the most resistance to that army, though, with a Crix infantry horde. Now, we may build a different kind of list for the second list, but the thing about that Gorshade list is it recovers from early attrition really well.
That's very true.
So, yeah, I think our recommendation then is the Gorshade 2 theme force, the 2 units of Bane Thralls is 20, or no, it's not even. It's only 19 points because you get the second UA for free.
There's usually, what, 2 full units of Thralls, a full unit of Knights?
2 units of Thralls, full unit of Knights,
2
Scrap Thralls.
Yeah, 9 Charters, Scrap Thralls, Mechanus, or the Kraken. Not Mechanus Thralls.
I'm not actually sure it all fits with the Kraken, to be honest with you.
I'll build it real quick.
Because the version that I played against this weekend had a Leviathan and an Arknode.
I was thinking about Cheruboga's list that he played against, and there was definitely Kraken, 9 Scrap Thralls, 2 Banes,
and then
Knights.
The other thing...
And then 2 whatever the repair guy is. I don't remember what
Necrotech.
2 Necrotechs?
I think there were 2, but maybe there was just 1.
So that gives you 2 repairmen and 2 scrap thralls, because they come with a scrap
point.
So that gives you 11 feet models, easy.
I think that was the list.
Yep. Mm-hmm. That was most of it. See the Cursed.
And Tartarus, of course, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, he is. Gorshade the Cursed. So yeah, that's definitely a pretty solid starter list. And with the Kraken in there, as a place to hide Gorshade, you can experiment with putting Occultation on the Bane Knights, which is a good place for them. Or which is, it's the only other place for them, really. Because you can't stealth the Kraken.
And actually, you can put Occultation on the Kraken.
Yeah, you can sure cast it there.
You can do
it
that.
It doesn't do anything.
Yeah, it's a bad choice.
And you want to put Phantom Seeker there.
Yeah, that was actually, Cheruboga's list was, when I played against it, I was like, this is just really... powerful.
Only thing that makes me a little sad is not having an Arknode, because he does have 2 really arcable spells in Curse of Shadows and Hexblast.
Sure.
Yeah.
Which is something I might recommend as you advance through the list. And I think we won't talk too much about leveling up these lists, because we just want something for you to get started with.
Yeah.
And rather than overload on information.
I think at this point we should also probably emphasize that despite the fact that we've entitled this as straightforward list for newbie to play, it doesn't mean that we don't think that these lists aren't...
By definition, we want them to be very, very strong.
Right.
Like Ryan Cheruboga, who's an excellent Crix player, he's coming with us on Team 1 for the WTC.
Mm. And is qualified again for the...
He's qualified for War Machine Weekend.
Two years in a row now, so...
Yeah, is playing plays this list
right.
in his standard pair.
So we certainly respect these lists as naturally competitive lists.
Yeah, no, these are the purpose of the segment is to put out powerful competitive lists that you can get up to speed on a little quicker
right.
than
right.
something that's a little more.
I just want to emphasize yeah. for people that may be playing this list that we're not like, oh, you're playing like a maybe list, and if you were really good at the game, because that's not what we.
They're
think,
easy so. To jump into, and some of these lists, I think Gorshade in particular has a pretty high skill ceiling. Like Gorshade 2, you can keep playing and learning new things about him
sure.
for a long, long while.
Yeah. Who should we pair him with?
That's an interesting question. I was thinking about P-Scar.
Yep.
P-Scar and P-Denny are both, they can play a lot of whatever they want to and make it very, very strong. And they both have good defensive measures. These are casters that are easier to get killed than others. Terminus is an option.
I think P-Scar is the correct... She's easy.
P-Scar gives you a really good... You always feel really good about P-Scar.
Yeah, it's easy and really powerful. I mean, you basically are never going to miss a single attack the entire game. I've seen games where that happens.
Yeah.
Multiple games where that happens, I should mention. Not like one-off, like, oh, you know, everything can happen once.
Right.
And then, you know, she's basically impossible to kill on her feed turn because she's got 5 plus D6 additional armor.
Yep.
She's got... Yeah, I mean, she's just really good.
My gut reaction was P-Scar and or Terminus when we were talking about this, just because in Terminus's favor, you're talking about a caster that plays exactly like you want to play the game when you start the game. And he's the only caster that, with the exception of maybe Butch 3, that can actually play the game that way and do so successfully. But
right, it's like, because one of the things that press gangers, and I don't know if they got this from Privateer, but I've heard this phrase a lot. It's like, War Machine is like... It's like cooler chess where your king and queen are combined. It's like that's sort of true.
Kind of.
But they're still a lot like a king most of the time.
I mean, in fairness, in chess, if you give away your queen, you also pretty much lose the game. Yeah.
Well, if you give them away, but you can trade them.
You can.
So let's just talk about your matchups and why we would take P-Scar or Terminus, because I think they're both an option. Probably the worst matchup for that Gorshade list is... Signar?
I'm not even sure about that.
I don't think it's bad. I think it's playable.
I think what's going to doom the... What gets the Gorshade list, and I'm going to speak more abstractly because I'm not thinking of a perfect example right away, is hit and run. Like, good hit and run things that you can't pin down.
Yeah. RFP, Chromac.
RFPs.
Cassius.
So there are... There's some circle issues, and P-Scar has got a good game there. So what I want to build across from this Gorshade list, like the Gorshade list is kind of slow and ponderous. It's inexorable.
You want speed.
I want speed. So I want Scar. I want some Texas Raiders to pair with it. Like Terminus plays too much like the Gorshade list does. It's kind of a slow inexorable. It's just instead of using Banes, you use a lot more Mechanithralls. And it kind of, your whole plan is just to deliver Terminus. And I actually think that to have a great deal of success with Terminus requires a great deal more practice than with P-Scar.
Yeah, I'd buy that. Here, let me build a list really quick. Do you guys talk about P-Scar? I've got an idea.
So for P-Scar, her main features, her biggest feature is Dark Guidance. It's a spell that in her control area, you get an additional die to hit with any melee attack. Friendly faction.
I'm not sure that's her main... I think I still feel like the feat is the show, but Dark Guidance is obviously the...
From my experience, like you may get drawn in by the feat, but you stay for Dark Guidance.
That's fair. I mean, a lot of the lists that people take that are tailored to fight against Krix, Dark Guidance solves the problem.
Right.
So that's certainly...
Like, we're going to fight in melee? Well, what are you going to do about these defense 19 Kazis?
Yeah.
Kill them with Mechanithralls.
Yeah, that's like my one... I hate P-Scar with a passion, not just because John was a jerk in Mark 1, but also...
John was not a jerk in Mark 1. John was amazing in Mark 1.
But also because my, like, preferred go-to Krix fixer, Ashlyn.
Yeah. Like, minus two met, sucker.
Yeah.
Like, so I'm just plus 1.5.
Yeah. She's just like, like her feet, and then the whole course of the game, she's just like, you can't hit my guys. And then Scar's just like, I can. Wow.
Fiona the Black is like, minus one die. So it's like, I'm rolling two?
Yeah. Hello, this is just like playing normal game. This is interesting.
So frustrating.
Yeah.
So the neat thing with Scar is that you can take highly inaccurate things like Mechanithralls and make them very accurate, provided they're not interfered with. So it's like your average Mechanithral, Mat 5, goes from whiffing ineffectually forever against Nissaners to knocking them down like they weren't there. Just like every Mechanithral kills, it's like 1.5 on average.
Yep.
It's like, that seems pretty good.
Which is like an entire unit killing maybe two.
Right. Yeah, between the losing some on the approach and when they finally get there, and it's just like never, it's not good. As it changes the Mechanithrals versus Nissaners from a route of the Mechanithrals to a route of the Nissaners.
Keith, I may have missed something in this list, but I want to read it to you. Tell me what you think.
Sure.
All right. So the focus, the way I built this list was to put as much protection for Scar as I could, and give it reach.
I like it.
And staying power.
I like it.
So I've got. Pirate Queen Scar, Scarlock Thrall, which is required.
Yep, gotta have a Scarlock Thrall.
Inflictor.
He's not out yet, but yeah, I think the Inflictor will become a mainstay in Scar lists, especially for players that are that have less practice about just the whole keeping her alive thing.
Yep. Daregraith.
Mm-hmm.
Slaughterborn.
Yep.
Satixus Raider Captain.
Yep.
Gorman DeWolf.
Yep.
Full Soul Hunters.
Maybe.
Two Necrosurgeons and Stitch Thralls.
Yep.
Mechanithralls with a Scarlock Commander, min unit.
Min unit? Yeah, maybe.
Blood Witches plus UA.
Max? Four,
yes. Okay. Full Raiders plus UA.
Yep. And that's the whole 50?
Yeah.
That seems light.
It seems light. There's full Blood Witches, full Raiders, Mechanithralls,
yeah.
Soul Hunters, Barak, Daregraith.
Yeah. I'm normally, in most Krix lists, I accept min Mechanithralls as the convention because they hang out in back and grow. With Scar, I really like to find the points for Max just because she kills them. She kills one a turn.
Yep.
So when your min Mechanithralls are two of them, there's only two left before you start adding any more, the unit loses some of its efficacy.
We can easily drop.
For a beginner list, I would lean towards just nixing the Soul Hunters.
Yep.
I like Soul Hunters a lot. They are fast.
And if you nix the Soul Hunters, Daregraith becomes less...
less good.
Yeah.
And you might not need him. But he is... the cool thing about Daregraith, though, is that for a newer player, when you're like, oh, man, I put this in the way of that, Daregraith is like, nope, it's okay. I can fix this problem as long as the things in your way are not Blood Witches or Satixus Raiders.
Yeah. What I like about Daregraith is if you're going to put him in the list, like, it helps Scar's camp.
Yeah, it helps Scar's camp, and it makes the Inflictor harder to kill in this version where we have a heavy Warjack. Mm-hmm. So I don't mind that. Definitely, so Texas Raiders for sure. They are...
I could drop Gerlach Slaughterborn and put a whole other unit of McThralls in. Two mins. I don't hate that either.
Yeah, the Satixus Raiders are stone cold incredible with Scar. Like, they are truly amazing. We didn't get around to talking about her feet, which is plus 5 to armor and strength for Scar's whole army.
It's just like saying it is, it's so laughably ridiculous.
The reason why I really like Soul Hunters on the list is
they become hard to kill.
She has to take 5 damage.
Yeah, no, they're fast enough.
Oh, does she?
To alpha with the Texas Raiders.
Yeah.
Which gives you an earlier feat turn alpha.
Yeah.
Which I think is really powerful.
It is. It is. You also get the cool incorporeal effect with Tall on the Saddle to let them charge in interesting places. So to use this list to its full effect, you're going to have to familiarize yourself with cavalry rules to be able to use the Soul Hunters to their maximum effect. They're a little bit more of a complicated unit to run. But the basic idea of this list is you want to get yourself into position to hit with as much of your army at once as you can. You've got a 10-inch charges from your Blood Witches, 14-inch charges from your Satixus Raiders, 13-inch charges, I think 13, from the Soul Hunters.
9, 12,
9,
14.
10, 11, 12, 14. And they're not speed 8. I think they're speed 8.
Yeah.
Are they speed 8?
They're The quick stuff, it tends to be one slower than...
Yeah.
That is, it's one.
Might be nines, but Darragh is an eight.
I think I think Soul Hunters are eight.
I feel like 13 is the number.
They are eight.
Or, yeah.
Yep.
So 12-inch charges from the 8, 9 to 11. 13. 13-inch charges from the Soul Hunters. So you've got, like, 10, 14, 13. You have very good charge distances. So the things that you want to learn in this is keeping all your mechanithralls alive, which is a skill you can transfer over from Gorshade. And keeping your stitch thralls in position to collect corpses from the Blood Witches and Satixus Raiders to build that mechanithral wave. Because the idea behind Scar is you alpha hard, you're gonna start losing those front models, but as long as they just build back into the back wave of mechanithralls, the game will go your way eventually. Losing the models is okay so long as they become mechanithralls.
Yep.
The Soul Hunters will eventually die. Hopefully they will kill. Hopefully they'll hit, kill one to three models each. That's what is what they can do. Probably average about 1.5 models per Soul Hunter on their charge in. And hopefully on the feat turn they'll be able to retreat with Light Cav and survive, or jam in further with Light Cav and survive, and then be able to go again the next turn to get their full to get value from them. And so with all that. And then the Mechanithral Wave to seal the game for you while keeping Scar alive. So the when I was talking about killing your own models, the Scarlock is going to cast her Ritual Sacrifice spell, which gives her an extra D6 focus every turn, which is pretty necessary for her to be able to cast Dark Guidance and maintain camp.
Yep.
To keep moving upfield. It's also, and the Inflictor can hang out near her as a shield guard. On her feet turn, she can get a little bit feistier because she's very hard to kill on her feet turn.
So the defensive elements that I put in this list, and that may be why it feels a little light in the pants, is I've got Gorman DeWolf, so you can place a cloud to block line of sight.
Mm-hmm.
Derek Wraith, that Beyond Death can make her a lot more survivable. And then obviously the shield guard. So maybe that's not too much.
The Raider Captain serves two purposes in this. Desperate pace for the Raiders to get them in very quickly, and then hanging back near Scar to prevent her from being knocked down. She also prevents the Raiders from being knocked down, but in most instances that's not crucial.
No.
They're not tough, so it's not like...
Almost everything that knocks them down kills them, so... Right. Yeah.
I'm trying to think. General advice for playing this list would be keeping the Raiders back one turn after they're able to charge, usually. Usually the Raiders can charge, like, if you're going first, they'll be able to easily charge top of two, especially if you run them too far on the first turn, and the rest of the army simply can't keep up. Not even Soul Hunters can really keep up with Satixus Raiders.
It's actually usually a mistake anyway to run them as far as you can, because you're running them usually into the opponent's reach.
What I would prefer to see with this list is Blood Witches filing up the middle, with Raiders and Soul Hunters taking a flank each, so that all three, and the idea being that all three of them will hit at around the same time. Maybe you don't get the Witches in there quite as quickly. Hopefully you do. And then that's obviously your feat turn. The other thing to watch out for is if there is something of significantly high enough armor, like a Colossal with an armor buff, you may need to save the feat until the Raiders can get to that. Because with the mini feat, which gives them Weapon Master, and Scar's feat, they become like POW 14 Weapon Masters, which solves most problems. With a 14-inch charge, it's pretty good. Soul Hunters become POW 18. If you ever get a chance to charge someone's caster with Soul Hunters, and you haven't feated yet, that'll probably do the trick.
Easily.
So.
Yeah, Soul Hunters are incorporeal too. So
incorporeal on their during their activations only, as long as they start close enough to Derek Wraith.
Yeah. You got to learn all those rule interactions. And again, we're not trying to build lists that are, like, we're not trying to make them too one-dimensional. We just want, there's going to be rules interactions. You're going to learn a lot about the game.
And Scarwind is another caster where the sky's the limit as far as learning to play her, using Sack Strike in interesting ways. Learning when and when not to cast Dark Guidance.
Applying Dark Guidance without getting her killed.
Yep.
It's not always easy.
Yep. And as you get better with it, you can remove some of the protective elements. Like Gorman DeWolf isn't a great fit in her list, but having the cloud there is certainly nice as a blanket.
I kind of like the Rust Bomb.
Yeah, I don't hate it.
Yep.
I don't hate it.
I mean,
I think the number of times I've used Rust Bomb in my life is so low.
I mean, Black Coil is obviously amazing too.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
I used Rust Bomb all the time.
Yeah. I saw Black Coil hit Nathan Hoffman's, both of his Prime Axioms.
Yeah.
It was like,
I actually saw it.
Yeah, 38 points of not doing anything.
It was
pretty miserable.
There was only
you
one,
heard about
there
it.
Was only one drift that would do it. Both dice had to. It was a 1 in 36 chance.
Yeah. He was like 10 inches away from... He had both of his Prime Axioms in base-to-base with each other. And Gorman was like 10 inches away from the one on the left, like directly in front of it. And he was not Artillerist, but he was Dougal Mini Feet.
Okay.
So he threw... It scatters from 2 inches in front of it, and he just rolls to the two... And then he rolls exactly 3 inches.
So it lands directly in the center.
It was like right where they meet.
Yep.
Like right where they're like touching.
Yep.
Like incredible.
I was talking about this last night. Just as an aside, I think Black Oil maybe shouldn't affect huge bases.
I'm of two minds on that.
Yeah. Because there are times that you need that turn.
Like, I mean, I certainly abuse the crap out of it.
Yeah.
Don't get me wrong, I use it. But I'm just saying, even from a fluff perspective, like, he throws this little vial, like, he's, like, throwing it above his head, and he's, like, black oiling a ginormous colossal, and, like, the colossal's really going to care.
I could potentially see, like, a rule for Colossals in equivalent to the cannot be disrupted, to where they never have to sacrifice their movement or their action. I could see that being just a facet of Colossals.
Haley, too, would probably hate that really bad.
Don't like that. Because there's a lot of effects that just force one and not both. That just force one without also, like, stopping guns and, like... It's all the other...
Right.
It's not forfeit movement or action that makes blind horrific. It's all the other things that...
The denying the ranged attacks is part of the... But, yeah. Like, stagger also exists in this game. Like,
I'm just saying, it's too easy to apply that blind grenade.
I agree.
Hordes people.
I think Gorman shouldn't exist.
I mean, Gorman is probably bad for the game, but it's not as bad if it, like, takes down, like, a 10-point heavy. You can play through that. But having a 19-point or 20-point or 18-point or whatever it is, Colossal sit on the bench for a turn, it's pretty steep price to pay for a 2-point solo.
I feel like you guys have gotten increasingly anti-mercenary, and I don't like it.
No, because I want Colossals to be valuable, and they already are.
I just want there to be parity.
I don't necessarily want it to be like Colossals... Colossals rule. Like, Colossals are the only things that you play.
Yeah.
And without these few things that punish people for having them being in the game, like, there's no...
There's a lot of reasons not to take Colossals anyway. They're limited in their movement. They're slow. They are predictable in where they're going to be because you have to pre-deploy them. I mean, I think there's a lot of reasons not to play. Like, I hate playing Colossals.
Also, from a fluff perspective, it is just ridiculous. It's just ridiculous if you think about how Black Oil works in your imagination.
I mean, I think that's what you're saying about the fluff. Yeah,
yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, you know, think of like Gorman standing. Like think of like imagine that you are Gorman, and you're looking up at a galleon. Like his foot, you wouldn't see past his knee, right? And I'm just imagining Gorman like, yeah, like he throws this little jug of black oil and it just like, covers his toe.
Yeah, I mean, and
that's how freaking sweet Gorman is.
And then Galleon's just like, oh.
I mean, think about this too. Like, he misses and it drifts and clips a part of the base. So, like, there's a little black oil on his toe or on a shoulder pad or something. It'd just be like, yeah, whatever. You know, I don't know. Like, it's just silly. And it's also, it's a little too powerful. Obviously, Black Oil was designed in a time when there weren't 20-point models running around.
Look, if you don't want to get your Colossal Black Oiled, just take Gorman to Black Oil your own Colossal on your turn. It's real simple. Just do that. Boom. Done.
Yeah.
I mean,
I will do that in the future.
Thanks, Woods people.
Try playing without Gorman.
I do. I have one list without Gorman every other turn of him in.
Throw him away.
No.
Throw him in the garbage.
No.
Do the same thing with
him. He and Thor, I have without Iris. She's not necessary. But he and Thor are making out in my case, and they're never going to stop making out in my case.
Right.
I just thought it was something interesting
to think
about.
If the Thralk had a 19-inch threat range, and if Hordes had any way of blinding at all, that wasn't Epic Morgul.
Like, Ice does still blind, technically, I guess.
I thought that I established this at the beginning of the cast. But let me reiterate. Josh Maxson doesn't care about all these people.
Oh my God.
Yes, you're right, Chad. There's disparity. I know that you're living in War Machine urban squalor.
Oh, although, I think Exigence is bringing some really interesting things.
Yeah. We'll see. I mean, there are things that I'm jealous of in Hordes.
Fury.
You have that?
No, the Fury system.
He has that?
Well, in fairness, I did pick the faction that lets me play whatever I want to play, because that's what I wanted to do. You could be a mercenary player, too. You could.
They have cookies. And you get to hang out with Josh.
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
So, our next segment, I think we're just going to go into some dojo. Not the giant tank.
I just think Black Whale should be shakeable. We've said this before.
It'd be real bad if it was shakeable.
Well, you're right.
I mean, it would be.
I guess he wouldn't be worth 2 points then.
He'd be a 2-point cloud bot. But why wouldn't I take a 4.3 cloud bot over him every time?
Because you can still apply -4 defense to something, which is a big deal.
Yeah, that's fair.
And rust, which is also a big deal.
And he'd still be stealth and immune to, like, everything.
Yeah, but you wouldn't care as much. Still,
I mean,
if he didn't say that model sacrifices his next turn.
He still has 3 other bombs.
No, he has 2 other bombs.
Well, the cloud is technically also a bomb.
There's the cloud, there's rust, and there's black oil. What am I forgetting?
Isn't there the corrosion bomb?
Acid.
Oh, yeah! Which I used to great effect this idea. Burp. So, Roman actually in my game this week killed 5 Satixus Raiders and something else with acid. It was awesome.
Yeah.
It's awesome.
Probably still worth 2 points.
Damn, Gorman is awesome.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Still easily worth 2 points.
Yeah.
Two!
I mean, if you nerf black oil, it should be a 1-point model.
This is so funny. Like, just as an aside, and I don't know if we want to get into this or not, but it's, like, impossible to talk about balance with people with their own faction.
I mean,
I'm really bad about it, too, with my faction. But we all are.
It's the pieces that you love the most, and you're just like, no, don't touch that. I love that. You have that you love that I'm not, like, Janessa shouldn't be able to pull so well. Like, she's too good. Like, she's impossible to kill. She can have all the rest of her stuff, but, you know, you should nerf that wall ability. You'd be like, no, get out of here. You lost your mind.
I mean, she's
my faction's
she's
boosted.
3 points.
Yeah, exactly. See? So, yeah.
Here's mine. Purification should get rid of Stone Aura.
Yeah.
It's not a spell, though.
Well, it should be.
The rule is we all have about, like, 5 to 6 pieces in our faction that we're just like, oh, I'm so in love with you. And, like, if you ever talk about nerfing that, we'll punch you in the face. Like, that's always doing.
It's just not, there's no, also the stone is 5 points.
You guys
should
come live in my world where the thing you love the most has been nerfed like 4 times.
And still continues to be a very
It's just that single argument where it's like, if Gorman didn't have black oil, he wouldn't be worth 2 points. Like, you can't. That's patently ridiculous.
He would not be worth as many points as Rugby Shaw. That's all I'm saying.
Well, okay.
That's the argument you make all the time with these things. It's like, would you pay 3 points for Gorman?
Yes.
Would you pay 4 points for Gorman?
Yes.
Would you pay 5 points for Gorman?
Maybe.
Probably.
Maybe. Five points is like, it depends on the list. It depends on the list.
I'm not saying it wouldn't hurt, but like, he would still be in a lot of freaking lists if he was 5 points. Like, right?
I think 4.
I would probably.
5 is hard to squeeze into a list.
I'm saying. Like, it would hurt, but he would still be seen a lot.
As an aside,
yeah.
Like, I'd pay 4 points for Janessa. Probably a lot.
Yeah.
I'm not sure I'd pay $5.
Well, I mean, here's the thing. Like, because usually when you go to use Gorman, you give up Gorman, right? Like, typically that's the case.
Usually.
So if he's at 5 points, now you're saying, I will sacrifice a tenth of my army.
Yeah, I mean,
to like time walk this piece.
You don't use him as frivolously anymore,
right?
But you would still like hold him back and hold him back and hold him back and be like, now.
Yeah.
You know, for
there will be lists where he would be played at 5 points.
Whatever.
Yeah.
Like Haley too. But
yeah,
I digress. I actually have another just thing that's bothering me.
Uh-huh.
Gorman just must be stupid, because wouldn't you think that like with this formula for black oil, he could just go to like anyone, like Cador or Signar, and say, "Hey, I have this formula I'd like to sell and be rich, and all you need to do is load it in your Spriggan rocket launcher or your grenade launchers or your grenadier, and just be like, just fire these." Just make this the payload.
It's actually in his fluff. He doesn't care about money. He's, like, actually just crazy. Like, he gets off on, like, going on the battlefield and, like, testing these things out and, like, being out there. That's why he does it. He actually is mad.
That's awesome, actually.
Yeah.
Otherwise, the fluff wouldn't work.
Yeah.
If he was really out for money,
yeah.
Of course.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Also,
way is that it must, like, it's... The ingredients may be obscenely rare or prohibitively expensive.
Yeah, no, he actually just gets off on going out on the battlefield and, like, doing it. Like, that's basically his fluff, so.
Why hasn't Crix, like, oh, I'll go work for Crix, and they just be like, well, we'll just borrow him and talk to him a little bit about this. Like, I could just see.
Because the 4 bombs that are on his card are not the only bombs he has.
Epic Gorman on his way.
Oh, man.
So,
4 new bombs.
And he will never be as good as, like, there will never be another Gorman as good as the first.
No.
Epic Gorman was pretty freaking good.
The Press Ganger one. C Gorman to Wolf.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Gorman to Sea Wolf. That was pretty okay.
There's no new rules for him.
No, there is.
Yeah, there were.
Hmm? Yeah, I've got him
somewhere.
They
were Press Ganger only, and they were Lock and Load only. It was like, one of his abilities was for each Privateer Press product you can name, he gains +1 like rat and +1 range on like all of his weapons or something like that. And then he had an Excarnate AoE that was like, if this AoE kills a model,
put like, a model in a C dog.
Put a model in a, like, it was like adding a model to any unit or something like that.
Yeah. Oh, okay. So it's just broken his balls.
Yeah. Because it's Gorman.
So moving on to our next segment, we're just going to get into the dojo for a while.
In the dojo.
In the dojo.
Can we call that last segment net decking for newbies? Can we call that?
Yeah, we can. We'll probably make people angry.
The proper use of net decking?
Yeah.
I'm still using it in its War Machine context as well. But so, I was building Signar lists and stealing Signar lists. I only stole one. And I managed to build 3 lists, none of which make me vomit at all.
That's rare, because you vomit at the drop of a hat.
Is
that hat, which makes me vomit.
Especially about Signar lists, which usually, when they don't include Boomhauler, make me vomit.
So you actually throw up, in the 3 list format, you throw up twice every time, like, you put your own list on the table.
Not literally, but figurative.
Yeah, okay, fair enough.
Figurative vomit.
Yeah.
Speaking of, the new Weird Al album is very good.
Just run some Argon Assault Corps as fake Boomhowlers. I'm sure it'll work out just fine.
Nothing wrong with that.
Trenchers do the same thing.
So, nothing like earth-shattering in my choice of casters. What I'm going to talk about first is the most obvious one. Haley 2 is in my rotation. And really, Haley 2, like, Boomhauler & Co. is such a staple unit in any faction that can play him, with the only exception of Kador, and I don't know why.
Colin thinks he's bad.
Colin does think Boomhauer is bad. He was chastising me for playing him the other day.
I'm going to actually share that opinion.
The Boomhauers are bad?
They don't do any work, so the rest of your list has to do a lot of heavy lifting.
They sure do work.
Walter said the same thing, but that means they're playing Boomhauer in the wrong list, which means they're playing the wrong casters. So in this list...
Colin said Boomhauer was bad with Epic Haley.
So keep listening to Miami for that.
Colin.
Yep.
There is no better Boomhauer than Epic Haley's Boomhauers.
I mean, I am pretty partial to Damiana's.
Damiana's Boomhauers are really good.
Yeah.
But Epic Haley's Boomhauers, they can run the table.
Yeah.
It's like, all right, I've got these Boomhauers. They're 4+ tough. It's like, oh, okay, look, I'm on board so far. They're defense 14, armor 21. That seems really dumb. They can kill defense 14 models from 14 inches away.
Pretty good.
And I'm going to time walk your whole army on the turn where you might be able to hurt them.
Yeah.
You want to pay 9 points for this unit? I do. I do.
That's the thing about Boomhauers is their stats, like, when you look at their baseline stats, you're like, I guess, like, 9 points is kind of expensive for this, but, like, it's close-ish. So anything that just sort of tips it just a little bit makes them easily worth the 9 points. And then there are a few casters that tip it way more than just a little bit.
Yeah. So places where I play, I only put Boomhauer in lists where he does work.
Yeah.
Where one way or another I get him to do work. I played him in Epic Game because with heightened reflexes on him, they make those tough checks and then they get to charge and still be 4+ tough. They do work.
The only list I've ever played them in where they don't do work, but I still gladly pay the 9 points is my Ostrom list. That's it.
I played them in PK for a while because Snipe plus Deadeye is ridiculous on them. Just Deadeye. Really, any caster with Deadeye should, if they can, should play Boomhauer. Like, Deadeye in and of itself is so good for Boomhauer. Because, like, you go first, you run them on turn one, turn two they walk and shoot, turn three they walk and shoot. They just keep walking and shooting until there's none left. Like, if they get one turn where most of them can walk and shoot something, they have probably... That plus their tar pit value makes their points back, no problem. So in Epic Haley, what they do, it's so ridiculous because, like, you can't shoot them down on the approach. Their defense and armor prohibit it. Under deceleration with the potential for Arcane Shield. Between Haley's feet and Deadeye, they can clear one unit, sometimes two, on their own. And she's got the focus to Deadeye them. And they live way longer than they should in any other list.
So what's your dojo?
Okay, so this list. It's got Boomhauer in it, surprise, surprise. The other units are Arcane Tempest, Gun Mages, and Lady Island and Masterholt, because we want to be able to crack some armor. Battle group is Centurion and Lancer. I may try very hard to find 2 points to turn Lancer into Thorn, because it is a worthwhile upgrade. Squire is in the list, of course. The solo list is long, as it often is. We've got Stacy and Gorman, Eris, the Journeyman Warcaster, Rupert, Alexia 2, and actually Reinhold made this list. In a 3-list format, Reinhold ended up in Haley 2. Kind of
very interesting.
Freaked me out a little.
Yeah, that's weird. So no Kane coming for these next 2 lists. Yeah.
So go over the next 2 lists, I guess.
What's the battle group again? Sorry.
It's a Centurion and Lancer.
Okay.
So this is it's a Haley list that's more focused on attrition. It doesn't have all the assassination vectors that some Haley lists do. I have the Lancer version of the spell assassination, which is a lesser version. And I've got the a Centurion to use for my heavy assassination, which can happen.
I think Alexia is an interesting choice here too, because frequently you see her with P Alexia thanks to TK extending the range on her ability to get in and wreck some stuff.
But. The reason I chose Epic Alexia is because I don't have Ragman. Like, all I've got for armor fixing is Ayana and Gorman for when they're appropriate. So the ability to have Epic Alexia drop, she's mostly going to be dropping thralls and stopping spells in this list.
Yep.
And under deceleration with a soul camp, like digging her out.
Yeah.
Her approach is important.
Her 15, 19, 10-box base stat line is so ridiculous that, like, if you ever, like, layer anything on top of that,
1721.
Yeah, exactly.
She has the get really like stat her. Line.
She's really good. I actually frequently, like, tried... There are times that I've been,
so
like,
wrong about her.
I want to play an Epic Alexia list. I'm, like, I'm trying to figure out, like, what caster I want to play based on the fact I just want to play Epic Alexia some. Because she's good and she's fun.
She's dropping kids off at the pool all day long.
She is, yeah. She's a great mom.
We talked about Anastasia DeBray in conjunction with Epic Haley before, how she has one of the most reliable espionages. She has the most reliable espionage of any caster in the game. Very hard to avoid. And things and ways to abuse espionage are manifold. In this list, an espionage is likely to result in a caster assassination, because if you know you have an espionage coming, it's like, I'm going to Deadeye Eris. Eris runs. Gorman runs. Like, Anastasia triggers, and all of a sudden you have a blind or a black oil disrupted caster. And then from there, things usually go poorly. So
you can Deadeye Gorman, too, if you need.
You sure can, if you're not going to get him to within 4 inches.
Yeah.
It's set up, Boomhowlers and the Gun Mages are intended to do most of the work against infantry. The Centurion, Epic Alexia, and to some extent the Boomhowlers are there to fix armor problems, and then the Solos to chip in where they may. Pretty standard Epic Haley with lots of things that I like. List number two is... almost a carbon copy of Craig Conroy's Haley 1 list. It is featuring a Stormwall and a Galleon run by Gaston. And so once you have that, it's basically filling in the rest. There's a Squire. That's the wrong list. There's a Squire. There is three Stormsmiths to unjam the Colossals. I wanted to run... This is the only character decision that was tough to make in building these three lists, was I wanted to put the Black 13th in here, but I needed them in another list. So, Tactical Arcanist Corps for additional protection on top of Haley's Vortex Spear, and allowing me to split the Colossals without giving away one of my two casters.
An angle, too, yeah.
Because in this list, you have all the weaknesses of two casters with none of the benefits. If you lose Gaston, the game will end.
Right.
Do you have... That's an interesting way of putting that.
Do you have Valak in the list?
I don't. I may end up dropping... Because I am playing a Gobber Tinker and three Stormcallers.
Yeah.
I wasn't thinking about that. I may drop a Tinker and one Stormcaller to add.
Relic.
Can Relic repair?
He can actually repair either of them.
Okay.
And he can jack... He's a Jack Marshall, so he can take control of the Galleon.
Yeah. So I may do that. It also prevents me from having to buy a Gobber Tinker, which is good, because they're very expensive. So the Journeyman Warcaster and also Master Gunner Dougal McNeil. So very long threat range for assassination in this list.
Also a Rat 9 effective Galleon, so it can just...
The Rat 9 effective Galleon.
Well, on its...
On its port shots.
But it has an effective drag of... Like, the drag itself from wherever it ends is 19, what, 10, 12...
19.
16? What? How are we getting...
It's plus 4. I've got Fire Group and...
Dougal.
And then, she doesn't have snipe.
And walk 5. She does not have snipe.
Okay, I thought she had snipe. Okay.
She has Arcane Shield, and Junior has Arcane Shield, so both Colossals are Arcane Shielded.
Okay.
That's super annoying.
That's the kick in the pants. Yep. They're Arc Shielded and probably unchargeable.
Yeah.
So a lot of the times, the second Arcane Shield may be on the Tactical Arcanist Corps to try to keep them from getting shot down, so that I can keep Haley up in the game so that they are unchargeable.
Yeah.
On paper, this list is such a, like, it's just like, oh, it's a Galleon on a Gaston. Like, that's not so, like, we'll just kill that guy. That's super easy. And then you start thinking about temporal barrier and clouds and spell vortex.
And two huge and bases.
Two huge bases. And
and that Gaston. And that galleon is probably the... You're probably leading with your storm wall, not your galleon.
Right.
So that Gaston is hanging like 8 inches behind.
And then, God, it just... And then it just seems impossible. On paper, anyway. So, I don't know.
Pretty rough.
And so this is a list that you drop against things that don't have the kind of threats that can come and get Gaston. You're not wanting to play this against the
Kassite Woodsman.
Yep, that was my first go-to, was Kassite Woodsman. I was like, what are we going to... Kassite Woodsman.
Anybody with, like, the crazy long... Actually, I'm trying to think of what's really problematic as far as...
What owns that list?
As far as what can come and get Gaston reliably.
Well, Siege will come and get Haley.
Maybe.
He can't stop Raven, Foxhole from dropping line of sight.
He can't see through huge bases.
He can Foxhole a huge base.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, you can.
You can.
That's true.
Raven, perhaps.
Yeah, Raven, maybe.
That's definitely
might
not.
Be able to maintain distance, but yeah, I'd much rather just play Epic Haley against Raven.
Yeah, I mean, you're not going to drop that into those matchups.
And I like Epic Haley against most Signar matches, too.
I mean, so. you're going to drop that P. Haley list into primarily melee.
Epic Morvana might not be great either, just for her potential to, like, feedback tree.
She can cast, as long as Haley is camping the right number of focus. Because you don't... Like, against Morvana, you probably don't put out Haley's Arcane Shield. You just put out Junior's.
Fair enough.
To try to trick her into purifying. To try to force a purification to get her spells off the table for a turn. And then you just, like, camp four.
Sure.
And then you're like, walk up, TB, Artillerist, gag.
Just keep working.
Rinse and repeat.
Yeah.
Like, under Temporal Barrier, the prospects of Morvana chewing through two Colossals does not seem good.
No, I agree.
It seems zero.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess...
the worry with Morvana is that she'd feet a bunch of models behind your Colossals.
Right.
And then you might not be able to clear them.
Right.
And to keep Gaston alive.
Well, my thought was the feet, not that she could kill the Colossals, that she would feet and kill the casters.
So the other option would be to drop the Stormcallers, that's three, So you could drop the Stormcallers, the Tinker, and the Tactical Arcanist Corps to get Gun Mages. Is another potential option.
I don't really like that.
So there's some because the gun mages with Haley's feet are kind of obscene.
Sure. I feel like the galleon does most of the work that you'd want the gun mages to do.
The only issue with the way I've built this list is I've pretty much given her feet away. It just doesn't exist.
Yeah.
It gives the storm wall.
You're not going to cast temporal barrier?
What's listed under feet on her card.
Yeah, fair enough. I was making a joke.
We gotcha. So that's list number two, and I like it a lot. It's actually more generalist than I originally gave it credit for. Like, Scorn does not want pretty much any part of that list. Not being able to enrage your beasts is a problem when they're coming into Arm 22.
Makeda 2 can get there. I don't know if she can kill a Colossal or not.
I don't think she can.
Yeah, but that caster's bad. She just has one game plan.
Because you have to move, like, all your movement has to happen before the charge part.
Yeah, I guess if you put Haley out front.
It's a dangerous game, and you got to do your math right with Haley, but
yeah.
You should be able to make it very difficult to charge those. And even if she can only leash, like, one in there.
Yeah.
You can't, and one doesn't do the job. Like, Makeda 2 does not make them hit harder.
Nope.
So Mullet Karn does not kill a Colossal.
Not when it's Arm 22?
No.
Not an Arm 22 Colossal. Dice minus 7, he's averaging like 4 points of damage per hit. Does like 20-some damage. Like.
And then there's a good chance that Makeda is in aiming range of the Galleon.
I think maybe P. Morgul's the answer.
Dead-eyed Harpoons are a big deal.
Yep.
So yeah, I like that a lot in a lot of matchups. The last list, so it's like we've lost Boomhauer, Eris, Anunholt, like pretty much every character that Signar ever wanted to play. So finding a third list at this point is very difficult, except I played a list in a Theme Force event that I loved.
Oh, God.
And in the current environment where they've sort of backed off the scenario pressure, and Colossals are around quite a bit, This list, I think it actually has plenty of drops, and it can drop against, I think, literally every Crix list in existence to great effect.
Most likely.
And that is Kane 1's Sons of the Tempest.
Poor Meat Mountain.
Yeah, Meat Mountain is going to have a real bad time. I'm not going to kill it all very quickly, but what I don't kill, I will push out of the way. I will push back.
Because
you have to damage to trigger the feat, right?
Yes.
Hyper-aggressive?
Yeah.
Sometimes you sadly do damage to trigger that hyper-aggressive.
Yeah, it might happen on, like, one warder, but then the rest of them might have to roll Byakkarth to damage.
Whenever I'm just like, I just need Mog to get out of here. Get out of here, Mog! And I'm like, Thunderbolt, Thunderbolt, Boxcars, Boxcars, Boxcars! Damn it!
And the other thing that Kane has going for him here is, it's like, say Mog is coming up on me. Thunderstruck!
That's true.
Back he goes, on his bum. Also, he's got his feet, which can dig into the Krillstone pretty bad. Anyway, this list is not just for Meat Mountain.
Yeah.
But what it is Kane, Sons of the Tempest. Kane runs two Hunters himself and a Sentinel, because points get short in this list. You get two units of Arcane Tempest Gunmage Pistoliers, as they are now called. Both with UAs, both running two Hunters, so six Hunters. And then the Black 13th Gunmage Strike Team. The only other thing that you consider with this list is whether or not to include the Gunmage Cavalry, which I am not hugely fond of.
I don't think you need it with the rest of the list.
It's just more of the same, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, but like...
Well, it's easier to kill more of the same.
Exactly. Like, and more points packed into fewer models of doing the same thing that everything else is doing.
Yeah.
Not as good, even, because Hunters are range 14.
That's actually why I don't really like that unit in general, because I feel like it's more of the same of Signar, but more valuable to kill.
Yep.
Yeah.
They have some things that are different, like their blessed shots are kind of neater.
I think if you could snipe them, they're pretty obnoxious.
Yeah. So, I mean, with snipe available to them, maybe they're worthwhile on this list. But
I mean, they have light cav after they shoot 14 inches. Probably going to be pretty safe.
I mean, this list just seems good, like, period.
Yeah, it is.
Period, end of story.
I feel
it's like
it
Kane
is.
Just kills infantry. Like, he's just, like, the infantry answer.
And that leaves the gun mages to mostly push things away that are annoying.
Yeah.
Right.
And you've still got six Hunters, so armor's not a problem.
Not really. Unless they have a way to remove Hunters at a rapid rate.
Yeah.
So unless you're in danger of losing more than one Hunter a turn, it's hard to lose.
Which is tough since four of the six Hunters are going to be range 18.
Yep.
Like, I just don't.
Also, it has like a kind of a wicked assassination if you're not on a small base, because one of those Kane Deadeyes one of the Gunmage Hunters, and then they use the hit boost with a Thunderbolt knockdown, and you probably fall down. If he doesn't get you with a Thunderstrike.
Mm-hmm.
So he's got a really...
Oh, yeah.
He's got a really easy access to knockdown. And then, like, the other five Hunters is like, oh, look, a knockdown caster. Like, I was thinking about Butcher 3. I was like, Butcher 3 is annoying against a lot of Signar. And I was like, not against me.
Yeah.
Like, Hunter's damage. Like, on full camp, they still average, like, 4 points of damage into him.
Unless they're hiding him behind clouds, which they frequently do.
Yeah. But you can get him with a beacon from Lynch, and then...
Oh, you can also push the clouds out of the way if they're, like, Grey Lord clouds.
Grey Lord clouds.
Why are... Grey Lord Turnian...
Yeah, they're pretty
they're
bad.
Not good.
I'm gonna rant on Nigel's behalf because he could not wake up. They don't have five wounds. Their clouds go away when the models die. Like, they're just...
But they're magic seven battle wizards.
They
only
are.
Only if you take a 3-point solo with them.
They're always magic seven.
So are rune shapers.
They could be so good if they had five wounds and if the clouds were just, I don't know, like Gorman clouds.
Yeah.
They have crit freeze on their sprays.
No, they don't actually.
They don't.
Oh.
Hi, Josh.
They do have ice cages.
They have ice cages.
Ice cages are really good. I mean, they're really close. I mean, they're not bad, but they're pretty bad.
So, yeah, I'm actually, and this is why, so you can see why Reinhold didn't end up in any of the other lists, because he's not eligible, and Haley McCain doesn't care.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I was just like, I guess lucky charm for Haley, too.
Not a bad thing.
/ the ability to measure an assassination.
I was going
to
say, every now and then, there are times I've thought about, like, maybe I'll put Reinhold in my Ostrom list, because I'm just like, man, 22 inches, hard to eyeball.
That'd be so awesome. 21.8, go ahead.
All right,
that's good, dude.
Thanks, Vegas.
I can just see Reinhold now. You want to know the range to what? The speck on the horizon? Okay, I'll do my best.
So this, yeah. I think, is tier 3. I don't think it makes it to tier 4.
6 hunters.
Blah. Yeah, I don't remember exactly. But the other neat bonus for the list is that Kane and all the gun mages are stealth for the first round. Which is helpful at times.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, those are my three lists, and I'm actually very excited about them.
That's awesome.
I'm going to run them out for a while.
I built a Signar list pair last night in Delirium.
Okay, we're switching to the jank tank.
No, I don't think these are janky. I think
mm-hmm.
they're good.
Mm-hmm.
I actually think these are legit.
Okay. In the jank tank.
So I'm just going to say for the record, Tom Gua, Nigel, and I should probably not be allowed to dojo together.
Is this the beginning of the disclaimer at the start of the jank tank segment? Users who operate any of the lists discussed within the jank tank
be held responsible for results.
Yes. Yeah. The opinions expressed in jank tank are the opinions of the of John Damaris only, and not of the rest of the Muse staff.
Yeah. I'm going to read off this list to you, and then you're going to figure out why I built this list.
Tell me the caster.
Siege.
Jesus. Okay.
Man, yesterday there was such siege erections all over. Yeah. There were so many people high-fiving about Siege, and I was just like, what is going on? This is a weird world.
Defender Squire. Well, I guess Squire's not technically.
Just a defender, okay. Yeah. Daily units present.
Black 13th.
Okay.
Gun mages plus UA.
Okay.
Minimum rangers.
There's only minimum rangers. Yep. There are only rangers.
Okay, rangers.
Okay.
Ayana and Holt.
Kidoki.
A minimum Ayana and Holt.
I'll prefer a max unit.
Also a maximum Ayana and Holt.
Yeah. And then I've got Journeyman Warcaster, Alton Ashley, Iris 2, Gaston, Dougal, Harlan Versch, Gorman DeWolf, Reinhold, Stormsmith Stormcaller, and 2 Gunmage Captain Adepts.
What was the battle group? Just a defender?
Mm-hmm.
Gaston's all by himself?
Yep.
So it was Gorman, Harlan Versch, she said?
Mm-hmm.
Dougal?
Yep.
Reinhold, Rupert? Yep. No Rupert?
No Rupert.
Terran?
No Terran.
That might be a mistake.
Foxhole, pretty good.
This just sounds like Colin's list.
Yeah.
Where he just wanted to boost as many shots as possible on the feed turn.
Vicky P.
Siege has a theme force.
Pendrake?
No.
All right. I feel like I'm missing a solo, but maybe not. Stacy?
Mm-mm.
Okay. Eris?
Yes, Eris 3.
3? Oh, my God.
2.
This list is
2.
Way better than I thought.
2.
This is legit suddenly.
Yeah.
Damn. Jank tank.
Jank tank.
I built this list to play against Crix.
Siege is your Crix fixer.
He has a lot of solutions that are really good. Mage Sight is amazing.
Ground Pounder and Mage Sight are good.
Yeah.
I'm 3 points short. Did you put Jakes in there or something?
Mm-mm. The Junior?
I got Junior.
Stormsmith?
I feel like if you cast Foxhole over a buried Helldiver, it should reveal the Helldiver.
That would be cool, right? You should just see the Helldiver. Just that.
Sweet, actually.
Yeah.
I have one, actually. I'm missing a solo. Must be. Did I get the Squire? Yep.
God, why isn't that a thing?
I don't know.
Awesome.
Pretty sweet.
I was thinking about...
I haven't seen Colin's list, but I feel like it's a lot different.
I was watching Colin play a little bit yesterday, and so He did the Foxhole attempted assassination in one of his rounds on a Colossal.
Yeah.
And, like, it's just in my mind's eye, like, the idea of this Colossal just, like, whoop, like,
yeah.
completely,
yeah.
like, sinking into the ground all of a sudden.
Yeah,
just like, whoop. Like, is that, yeah. so my Colossal base is actually slightly less than 5 inches.
It is.
It's like yeah. 1 millimeter less okay. or something like
okay.
that.
Yeah. The reason why I think it's good is you can see through clouds. So, like, Lich
only
is
Siege and his Defender.
Correct. Or whatever I fire beacon. Which is everybody.
You fire beacon everybody?
What, fire beacon allows everybody else to see through the clouds.
It's not just friendly faction. It's just
it is not.
Friendly. Okay.
Right.
So, but I mean, even Siege and his Defender, like, that's quite a bit. Because there's not that much hiding behind the clouds.
It's like two boosted 14s and a boosted 15? Defender 15 or 16?
15.
15, yeah. That's pretty good.
It's pretty good. It keeps Lich honest. It also, like, pushes the Bile Thralls back, and then you just play, like, Shooting Gallery and shoot all their stuff.
Yeah.
I don't know that Signar needs to bend over backwards and take GMCAs to beat Kricks.
It's not... I just think they're good. Brutal.
You have
they
a
have,
GMCA on the list?
I have two GMCAs.
No.
They have brutal damage all the time on a two-point solo. They have Phantom Seeker. They're just a good solo. Like, they have Snipe Shot, so...
They're decent.
Yeah, they're not bad. They're a fine 2 points. And they're really good on Siege's V-turn.
If Ryan didn't exist, I feel like people would be, like, way more...
Gun Mage Captain Adepti.
Yeah.
I mean, every time I look at Ashlyn Seam Force, I'm like, I get to take Gun Mage Captain Adept solos. And I'm like,
There's just so many things about them where it's like, okay, they don't ignore stealth like regular Gun Mages. They have to aim.
Right.
Rat 8's pretty sweet.
But I mean, yeah. I feel like this list
and brutal damage is pretty sweet.
Really good against most of the Kricks drops because it just blows their list off the table. It should be really good against traditional Signar problems like Fist of Halak, Mead Mountain, like any medium based list is just going to go away.
Yeah,
in one turn. I don't know. I think it's a fine drop. It'd be a good. It has like a lot of assassination vectors. I mean, the only real issue with it is a dedicated armor spam would be bad for it.
I feel like I was sold a bill of goods, because when you were describing, when you said you were going to describe this list to us and then ask what we wanted to, or what we thought it would be.
It's for Meat Mountain
doing,
and Lich.
I felt like it would be, yeah, I felt, but the way you were selling it was like, oh, this is going to be some super secret.
And it's like,
no,
and
no,
it's
no,
like
no.
slight it's variation on the
Siege
list.
And all of the stuff that Siege is good with.
Yeah. Oh, that's good. Siege and good Siege stuff.
But, I mean, because Colin's been talking for a while about putting all of the boostable stuff, like all of the solos that can boost and all of the...
Yeah, but he plays with a Stormwall, which makes it not a Kricks drop.
How come no Epic Alexia?
What's that?
Why no Epic Alexia?
Or P Alexia.
Because I thought about it. Actually, I built a P Haley list with P Alexia in it.
Nice.
P Alexia has fewer... Like, it's the same reason that we... criticized Colin putting P. Alexia in his, like, because it's a bunch of solos, she won't collect a lot of corpses.
Who cares? She's a boostable pile 12. That's all he cares about.
At yeah. 5 points, you get a boostable pile 14 from Epic Alexia for 4 points.
Yeah.
If you can get a soul. And live.
I kill that
bitch all the time.
Yeah. Yeah, I told
that's
you this actually wasn't
on
very...
On Ashlyn's screen.
This wasn't yeah. very...
That's true, you did.
I said this wasn't very janky.
Yeah, yeah, it's true that you did that. That's actually fair enough. That's true. You did not. You did.
Yeah, but
that.
Like usual, we thought you were
like smoking crack.
You know, pontificating.
It seems good. I mean, it's Siege's take on solo spam, and his feet is good with solo spam, and he's got Foxhole, which is really.
I can put a lot of the important solos in.
Potent.
In a Foxhole.
Yeah.
Early in the game, and yeah,
in
he just.
Foxhole.
I don't know.
Should go up against, like, Breath of Corruptions or something like that. But, I mean, obviously, then you're not going to pack everything into a Foxhole.
No, you will. You'll just be like...
I mean, once in a while, like, you'll play against someone that's that...
On autopilot.
Yeah.
Like, this is what Siege does.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And then, like, all their stuff will die.
So you said you had a companion list?
I did. So I felt like this list maybe would struggle with armor a little bit.
Yeah.
So I may...
The Siege list?
A dedicated armor spam.
Like
you have one turn.
Beast, like a beast brick.
I'm not sure. He might be okay. I'm just not sure.
Siege just naturally solves armor, in my opinion.
He seems to run out of steam when chewing through, like a colossal.
Yeah, I sort of agree with that assessment. Like, his feet's really good if you put stuff that can put... Like, if when your Defender Cannon does, like, you know, 15 to something or whatever, then, like, the rest of it can fill in. But, like, when you only have the one Defender Cannon and the rest of them are POW 10s and POW 12s, like, going in, like, you don't put enough initial damage on the AP to, like, punch through and finish it, I don't think. That's my...
Yeah, I'm just not sure if I agree.
I mean, there are a lot of siege lists that can finish out. I'm not sure this one does. There's no Hunter. There's no Colossal. There's no...
There is Rust, Harm, and a lot of boostable POW 12s.
That's true.
And removing of...
That's what I'm saying.
I have taken POW 12s all the way against Armor Spam a lot of times.
Yeah. And then he also has some... Like, his feed actually gets the party started pretty nice. So it might be okay. I'm just not sure. I need to test it.
Our companion list.
I might switch out Epic Eris in the Siege list and put it into this list, because I'm not sure this list does everything I want it to. But it's Haley Tube, Squire Stormclad Lancer, Strange Ways, Journeyman Warcaster, Lanissa Russell, don't laugh, Stormsmith Stormcaller, because hey, a point. Sword Knights, Minimum with Officer and Standard, Marshalling a Stormclad, Arcane Tempest Gun Mages plus UA, and a minimum unit of Stormblades.
Stormblades.
Yeah.
This feels much jankier, but because it's Epic Haley, it's less prone to user error.
It's a double Stormclad threat.
I can put two Stormclads into a Colossal 17 inches away.
I get it.
And most Colossals just die. So,
yeah.
This is like 3 points different from the list that Ben ran when he started playing Signar. And it was his idea. What he was trying to get was the triple threat assassination that could all be run at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
The Defender on the Gun Mages with Strange Ways.
Mm-hmm.
The Stormclad on the Sword Knights with the Stormblades. And Haley with the Lancer.
Yeah.
Yeah. I just have two Stormclads.
Yeah. Yeah. So loses the Defender threat for the ability to actually, like, kill a Colossal, which was something that didn't exist back then.
Also, I think occasionally, probably not even too occasionally, like, probably it might be more than you think. You probably get both Stormclads on a Colossal and then don't kill it, and then you're just like, burp.
Well, you put them into one side, hopefully, and feet.
Oh, that's pretty good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So... Yeah, I just feel like you have a lot of options with that list because of her feet. Like, you get to put two Stormclads in, kill something of value. The Electro Leaps will kill a lot of, like, just random stuff. Like, mm-hmm. Random stuff will die. You have Gun Mages. You feet, you do it again. Like, you're pretty cooking with gas at that point. There probably isn't going to be a lot that threatens those Stormclads left.
And I don't disagree with Lanissa Rissell in this list. The ability for that marshaled Stormclad to act like it has 4 focus, pretty good.
Yeah, the only thing is, a lot of the times you're operating at such extreme threat ranges that she has problems like...
That delivering Lanissa there.
Yeah, but I mean, you've got TK.
Yep. She's speed 6.
Helps because she's defense 15 base.
Yep.
So she herself has a 16-inch threat range on it, which is about what the...
Yeah. It's not too hard.
The Marshall Stormclad goes 19 with TK.
15, 17 with TK, 19 with Temporal, 21 with...
I forgot about Temporal, too.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, I don't think she's necessary. I don't think Lanissa Rissell is a threat range extender in this list. I think she's a free charge.
No, she's a free charge. That's why she's put in there. But potentially, somebody might not see an angle where they'll think that, oh, well, I'm 21 inches away from that Stormclad, so I'm fine. And then they'll both get in, and I'm like 13 or 14 away from the other one or whatever. But... Yeah, it generates a lot of free focus for, you know, it generates...
There's an interesting conversation that we were having a few weeks ago, where we were talking to the Chain Attack guys on Facebook about a conversation that they had about... Jay flushed this argument, which is why I think it's kind of funny that I'm bringing it up, about skill caps in the game. And it sounded like they were basically having this giant, like, semantic arguments about, like, Trevor's idea of what a skill cap is different from everyone else's in the world's idea of what a skill cap is. But Nigel made a really interesting point that I want to repeat here, where he, in his opinion, and I think I agree, Epic Haley has one of the biggest ceilings in the game for how well you can play her.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know whether this is considered a skill cap or not. I don't really care. But, like, the sky is basically the limit for Epic Haley. Like, if you play 1,000 games with Epic Haley, on your 1,000th game, you can still learn new things and new techniques to use with her as you did in your first.
Yep.
Sure.
Because she's just got so many different options and angles and ways of doing things that
is what a skill cap is.
I agree, but I didn't even want to, like, you know.
Well, she also is, and I think where Trevor was getting hung up is she's also has a low skill floor, and that she's powerful enough to win a lot of games because of just doing, like, random things like casting D-cell, using telekinesis.
Trevor's definition of skill cap is the level of skill required to use win. Them effectively.
Yes.
That's not a skill cap.
This is not drive over. Like, we've changed the mantra of this podcast. We no longer run over Trevor with a bus.
I'm just saying, much like that terrible hat on top of Keith's head is at the top of his body, a skill cap is at the top. Not at the bottom.
Okay, but it's a semantic argument, and it doesn't really matter.
It doesn't really matter. No, the important part is the discussion about Epic Haley, and it's one of the reasons why I kind of want to play her, because I think that it's a rewarding experience to experiment with her and play her and get good with her. I think that would just be a fun journey.
And agreed.
It's also interesting. Something that I heard, maybe it's just because I don't read the forums anymore, and this is where a lot of that came from, but something that I experienced a lot when I first came into the game, in some ways I missed this, where there were the casters that people complained about and wouldn't play against. And Epic Haley was one of those. Like, yeah, you brought Epic Haley down to the casual night. I'm not playing against you. Like, that's not what casual night's about. That used to happen a lot more back when I started playing than I have seen it recently. Or at tournaments, people would be like, oh, he's Mr. Cheese.
Yeah, one of these guys. Yeah.
And now it's just like, yep, there they are. Like, there's the casters I expected to see. Well, I'm prepared. Like, people have buckled down and sort of gotten over it,
yeah.
I feel.
And it's, I mean, there is value to playing Dark Horse casters. Part of Chuck's success is the fact that he will catch you with your pants down with interactions that you probably haven't seen or thought about.
People are like, Naresh, he's supposed to be garbage, right? And then and then on turn three, they're like, wait, he has Cyclone?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
I didn't know that.
So, yeah, and I agree. I think playing Epic Haley, the more you play her, the better you can get, and there's basically the sky's the limit there. Same with, like, Epic Kruger.
Well, there's just so many permutations of how to spend her 9 focus every turn.
John, real quick. What be a one-legged pirate's favorite restaurant?
Long John Silver's?
No. It be IHOP. Yarr.
Skill cap on pirates jokes is so high.
So high.
The sky is really low.
It really is the limit.
The floor is so low. Why do you guys do this to me? Why do you laugh and encourage him? Because it's painful for me.
If something's funny, I'll laugh at it.
Exactly. Exactly.
Okay, I smiled a little. I had to fight down the laughter a little bit.
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah.
But only because all you guys were laughing like buffoons.
Right.
Yeah, anyway, and I got to give credit to Nigel because he was talking about the double jack bullet with Haley, so.
Well, I got to go. I got to go to work. Well, you guys can continue talking. It sucks that right when we're starting to have an interesting discussion that I want to be a part of.
You want us to table it for next week?
No,
we'll bring
Nigel on.
Barriers to entry and skill cap into our discussion in a future.
Yeah.
At a future time.
Yeah.
Cool.
In a discussion with all like-minded and reasonable individuals.
Mm.
Oh my god. I'm gonna get blown up.
That's
fine.
No, I'm gonna get blown up.
You guys should still talk about the tournament. Before I go, I want to say, because we had to record early this week due to work schedules, and I have to get going quickly, which is just the way it works out. It's, you know, well. But before you guys, if you guys talk about the tournament, I just want to say it was super sweet to see all of those people in our store. It was really fun to help judge and do things like that. Shout outs to Tom Guan for winning the whole thing.
Well,
spoilers.
Technically, Jordan won because Tom scooped him in the final.
Fair enough. That's true. Jordan won. He got first place. But since he's already qualified, yes. The qualifier position goes to Tom Guan. I also wanted to say JR did really, really well.
Yep.
And I was really rooting for Nate Hoffman at the beginning of the day, but he had an epically bad game. That was not his fault.
No, this that was the 38 points. That started our whole black oil discussion.
Yeah, I'm sure. So that you can probably hear all about that on Crippled System. I'm not sure how much he's going to go into detail on it, but
he seemed to at some point. He was upset by the dice, midway through
the
game.
He took it pretty well.
But then by the end of the game, he had just accepted, this is the most ridiculous thing I've ever seen. And
yeah.
it turned into, a laughing fun thing. So it was pretty cool.
So anyway, I'm sure I'm forgetting a whole bunch of people that I saw. But whatever. It was a sweet weekend. Thanks for everyone who came to the store. And that's it for me. This is Chad. But you guys keep talking.
Right. Thanks, Chad. Well, I guess that's a good segue. Let's talk about the tournament a little bit.
Yeah.
We had a little 42, 45, something like that person tournament.
Mid-40s tournament.
Yep. War Machine Weekend Invitational Qualifier. See ya, Chad. And it was awesome. We had people from – we had the Mid-South guys. They're from Arkansas, I think, and they felt very at home. Apparently, we're very Hicksville. So.
Yeah, Iowa.
We had people from Chicago, Cheddar Caveman. Chad, that was his first visit to our store. I didn't realize that. I thought I'd seen him at a Mayhem Cup.
So had I.
But we've just seen him at Adepticon and places like that. And so
friends from Omaha made the trip, which they often do.
Yep.
Always appreciate it.
Yep. And then the Mattis, the Crippled System guys, and they had these really sweet jerseys. I mean, they looked like a middle-aged football team that had won something in 1985 or something, and we're reliving a dream. But it was pretty cool. We had our friends from Cedar Rapids, Billy Ship and the boys,
mm-hmm.
from First Turn Games.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Shout out to those guys.
Mr. Boatwright was there as well.
Yep. Good guy. Good player. Tom Guan from California.
So, just to get the elephant in the room out of the way, Josh and I will quickly talk about how we scrubbed out in round one.
Nigel did too.
Awesome.
Yeah, all three of my horses went down in round one, and I was like, come on, guys.
It was embarrassing for me, but at the same time...
It was frustrating for me.
So, in my game, I played against Epic Morvana. Randall Robinson from the Mid-South crew. I like all those guys.
Yeah, they're great
very
guys.
Pleasant. I didn't have any problems in the game. I was playing my P.E. Denny list with lots of guns, which I like against Morvana. His Morvana list was Skinwalkers, Druids, Una with a Quicken Chicken, a Riphorn Satyr, and a Stalker. And a Blacklad Wayfarer, and a unit of stones with a UA. It was Incursion, and the thing that got me, ultimately my mistake was I didn't properly account for one of the flags, which was easy to do, an easy mistake to make in this particular instance, because there was a giant, stupid, Lion King tree on one side of the table that was blocking me off from there, but I could have accounted for it, and I didn't. So that was the fatal flaw in the game.
So a mistake of deployment or a plan?
It wasn't deployment. It was turn three. I needed to adjust, and I didn't. So I was way up in attrition for most of the entirety of the game. The only thing that went wrong in attrition, and if this had gone right, my mistake would have been mitigated. There was a turn where I needed to kill all the skinwalkers to shut her feet down, to prevent the feet from being a huge attrition issue. So I needed to kill all the skinwalkers. They were all pretty bunched up. Fog of War was down, and I had plenty of guns in the area, so I just wanted to kill them with guns. I had already feeded, so I just wanted to drop Crippling Grasp on them and then shoot them to death. Had the Scarlock move up to try to Crippling Grasp. He whiffed his 5. Denny tried again, and she whiffed her 5. So because of that, my mistake cost me the game. Because in order to get those Skinwalkers out, I had to commit Snapjaw, who then got killed by his beasts without being able to do that. If things had gone perfectly that turn, I would have the Scarlock would have landed his 5. Nigel, sit down and grab a mic.
Yeah, Chad just checked out. This is good timing.
We'll sign Nigel in. If the Scarlock had dropped his Crippling Grasp on, and the guns had taken out the Skinwalkers, Denny could have dropped a Crippling Grasp on the Riphorn Satyr, and I could have put Snapjaw into that, most likely killing it. Which would have put me in a dominant position on that side of the board, which is ultimately where I lost the game. So this is I want to use this as an illustration of how sometimes your mistakes don't matter, and it's harder to identify them, and sometimes they do matter, but it's still important to identify them rather than blaming the luck that made the mistake cost you. Because the mistake was there. I didn't properly account for that flag. The mistake wouldn't necessarily have costed me the game if I hadn't gotten unlucky, but I didn't account for that eventuality, and so I lost the game. I could have played better to win the game. It was not missing 2 fives that lost me the game. It was the mistake I made that lost me the game. So I was able to move through the other side on attrition and start taking the center flag, but I wasn't able to keep that far flag locked down, and on my very last turn, my assassination attempt hinged on killing the counter magic druid, which Dougal needed a 7 to do and missed, and then I had a chance to get a siren into place to spray him, but I needed to be outside of 7, inside of 8, and I had to run a necrosurgeon to spray, and I didn't do that, and that didn't work for me either. So I missed those 2 sevens, I missed the 1 7 and didn't line up the other one. So I had two chances to recover from my mistake. Neither of them worked out. So the mistake cost me the game.
Yep, and you lost on scenario.
Yep,
that's actually an interesting part of the incursion scenario. The fact that the mobile casters have a big advantage. So Morvana with a light cav move or Lich with a teleport. Yeah, because the outside flag is worth more.
2 points for some reason. Yeah, so my game, it's the first time I ended the game with 56 kill points. That was the entire army. And 5 control points, but lost the game. So that was a new way for me to lose a game. But
Josh, how do you keep doing this?
Yeah, I don't know.
You're some kind of savant.
I'm just trying to find if I can find every way to lose a game.
An unlosable game.
Right. Then I'll know in the future how to avoid ever losing a game again, right?
Once I've lost every way possible.
Yeah.
I've indexed them.
So my first round was against Dan. Wagner from Madison. And his list pair was Epic Lich and Gorshade 3. I chose my Ostrom list partially because I'm not really super fond of my Damiano Pirates list. That's my other pair. And also just because I don't actually hate the Ostrom list, I think, is fine versus Krix, despite its reliance on the Colossal, just because of the long-range threat on that Earthbreaker and how much work it does. So it ended up being Epic Lich versus Ostrom. We were actually doing... I did the math wrong earlier when we were discussing the feat. The feat actually requires him to deliver 9 Banes. So to statistically kill the Earthbreaker. And that's if I don't feat. So even playing aggressively, like, there's some room for play there. But at any rate, Dan played well. He apparently has been abused by the Earthbreaker up in Madison a few times.
I would call Dan an up-and-coming player from the Madison area. He's actually getting to be pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
I watched him play in Cedar Rapids Trolls,
yeah,
and he played pretty well. And then, obviously, he's running around with Cricks.
Yeah. Well, the tendency with Gatsby is, you know, obviously you want to get off an Excarnate or whatnot. I guess I should run through my list because I don't know if I've ever talked exactly what's in the Osram list that I'm running, but it's Osram and the Earthbreaker, obviously, with Thor. And then I run a full unit of Boomhauers, full unit of Gun Mages with UA, Ayana and Holt, Hearn and John, and then a bunch of, solos. A full unit of Gun Mages, right? I mean, with the UA, it's a full unit of Gun Mages.
They're making fun of me.
Yeah, yeah. And now me. But Terran, Delavisi, Epic Eris, Gorman, and Dougal, of course. So...
you ever thought about putting Cockbottom in your list?
Like, so he would be there literally just for, like, Gun Mages and Boomhauers not breaking.
He's got a Skin Spray.
Yeah, yeah. He also, if I put him in, it means I can't play Pirates as an opposite list, which is problematic. So, yes, I considered it, but also all those solo pieces, like, do something very important and integral. Like, the one that's the most flexible is Gorman, but, like, Gorman is actually, like, the number of times I've cycled Snipe onto Gorman and blinded something from... you know, 16 downtown. Inches away.
But you also have Dougal's mini feet. So.
Yeah, exactly. So, like this is actually, this list between, Gorman, the Earthbreaker, and Hearn and John makes the best use of Artillerist of, like, any list that I've ever played. Like, he's just, like, every turn I'm just like, what do I need to Artillerist? Because could be any of these, and it's pretty sweet. But anyway, his Lich list was pretty, I mean, fairly standard, Bane, Bile with the Skylock, main unit of Blood Witches. Had a full unit of Satixus Raiders in it. And then...
Jordan Knack plays the same.
Okay. And then he had one Arknode and Saxon Oric.
No Helldiver.
There was a Helldiver as well.
Duh.
So that was the Lich list. The whole point of the Osram list is just to kind of, like, catch everything on the Boomhowlers, and then because of martial discipline, you can still see through and kind of, you know, kill what is caught on the Boomhowlers, and then the Boomhowlers move further up the table. And that's basically how the game played out for the most part. His Satixus Raiders ended up running. I won the first turn. Satixus Raiders ended up running, jamming me up. And Terran, or the Earthbreaker managed to go up on the hill. That was the other thing, is I got a side with the hill. I was really surprised he let me have the side with the hill since I chose to go first. So we got up onto the hill and just tuned up to hit, killed the Sea Witch, and then some other stuff. And Terran Black Pennied a couple of Satixus Raiders, Gorman threw an acid bomb that killed like three Satixus Raiders, etc. Just, again, clearing stuff off. Every turn he would send waves of things into me, into the Boomhowlers, catch him. I was able to snipe out the hag on the second turn to keep her from removing my Boomhowler screen.
Just with a Drifted Blast?
No, just...
A gun mage.
Like, two gun mages killed her. I did actually Drifted Blast on her, but only put 1 point of damage on her. But yeah. So... he spent a lot of his turns trying to whittle down the Boomhowlers and eventually the Gun Mages. He was scared of coming up for an Excarnate, because if he comes up for an Excarnate, he can't bunker behind clouds. So every turn he was just bunkering behind three clouds to keep Lich from getting knocked down and killed. Which I think is the right play for the most part for the Lich player. I think he should have been more aggressive because I didn't have to fear the feat for several turns. But aside from that, I think he played well. I think Terran probably killed, like, Black Penny in this game was absurd. I think she killed, like, probably seven or eight models over the course of
really?
The game.
I've never had Terran kill anything. I've had her shoot a lot of things, but she, like, misses or hits and then spangs damage.
She killed, like I think she killed, like, three Satixus Raiders. I think she killed one, Blood Witch. I think she killed like two or three Bane Knights.
It was just her day.
Yeah.
Terran's kind of a finesse piece. I've always noticed that she performs well. She's a finesse piece that has a certain niche. She always performs well if you have a good catching tar pit.
Yep.
And if you put her in a spot where she gets to aim.
Yeah. And martial discipline makes it even sweeter because she gets to ignore the boom howlers that are catching. So she's like, I can always black penny. I don't care where you're positioned on the other side of that boom howler. So, but yeah, so just through weight of attacks like solos and the fact that my boom howlers were able to dull his advance and that I didn't have to fear the feet for many turns, I was able to just add attrition over the course of the match. I ended up clearing off the left flag and moving the Earthbreaker into it, scoring a point. And that was when he came up to feet. He was able to get about, I think, 6 or 7 of the Banes on, and one of them rolled snakes, missing it on its attack. Left me at, like, had some kind of a few spike damage rolls. I think he left me on, like, 6 to 8 boxes. But out of fully operational side movement and cortex. So Tinker went and repaired Pop Feet and was able to go and kill Tartarus to remove him from the equation. At this point, like, I was basically just cleaning up. But I was down. He'd managed some purges and whatnot. I was pretty much down to half my gun mages and then, like, random solos and Osram and this damaged Earthbreaker. So he brought in Glitch, charged it, finished off the Earthbreaker, and teleported to the flag to score his first 2 points. I could have probably positioned my Tinker in a position where he would have been contesting the flag as well as gone to repair, and that's actually a mistake that ended up costing me the game, because those 2 points, him getting ahead 2-1, ended up being the big difference in the game.
Because he can score 2 every turn.
Because now he can score 2 every turn, and I
on
can
his turns.
Right, and I can score 2 on my turns if I control both flags, but the center flag, he still had a few random pieces that I was trying to clean up. Unfortunately, my gun mages had broken when they got purged on, and so I had 3 gun mages that attempted to rally for 3 straight turns and failed every turn, rolling 10s. For some reason, Osram is not command 10. I don't know why, but...
he's short. Nobody respects him.
Yeah. I respect him. He's sweet. And Dan respected his power of this game pretty well with Lich. But yeah, so, I mean, the game ended. We actually scored, like, on his final turn because, like, I'm able to position, like, a solo or two every turn to contest the flag that he's on, but because of the ability of teleport, he can move off the flag, kill them, and teleport back to the flag and still score points when most casters have to choose between one or the other.
You couldn't kill him with the Earthbreaker?
The Earthbreaker was dead. He killed the Earthbreaker.
He did kill it.
He killed the Earthbreaker. That was when he started scoring. He moved in and killed the Earthbreaker with Lich. And it's possible. The problem was I had to move the Earthbreaker was the only thing that could kill Tartarus, so I could start scoring. And so I had to obviously be within 5 of Tartarus, and it was not possible for me to be within 5 of Tartarus and out of range of Lich's charge. And knowing that, I should have, like I said, I should have positioned the Tinker differently, and that's what cost me the game, was positioning the Tinker incorrectly on that turn. But yeah, he was able to, on the final turn, like, I had to keep trying to clear stuff off the middle flag, so I wasn't able, like, he always had, like, one piece down to, like, Saxon on the last turn that he could run and contest the flag so that on his turn I wouldn't score a point there. And that ended up, like, I was only able to get it to 4 on my final turn. And then he scored, and we went to 6-5 on his turn. And apparently, I didn't know this, so this is something I learned. If you're both over 5, the one with more points wins if one has more points immediately at that point. So
yep. Was there any time where you could have... I know you were running solos into contest with Lich. Was there any time you could get one into base with the flag?
One time I was able to, and I did. And
yeah,
I scored.
You can
it.
Score that, yep, which yep. is kind of tricky.
I did. That was actually how I went to from 1-3. So it was... It was 2-1 after he killed the Earthbreaker. Then I went 3-2 on my turn. Then he went 4-3 on his turn. And then I scored on the center flag, but Dugo, because he's only speed 5, was not able to get base-to-base with the flag when I ran him over to contest. So,
and he went to 6, and you went to
5. And then he went to 6, and I went to 5. Yep.
Rough.
So, yeah. So
that's a well played game though. I mean, you guys both are down to nothing, and there's just casters left, and
yeah,
digging it out on scenario. So
yeah, so
and Lich is an end game piece.
Yeah, I mean, it kind of reminded me of, like, those stories, the old stories about, like, how Lich was a nightmare when, you know, he can contest zones or whatever, and like, yep. was just unkillable. Because, I mean, once he killed the Earthbreaker, I had Osram, who will never, ever, ever out-threat Lich. So that's just never going to... Like, Osram can't go in to threaten Lich, because he'll just get killed by Lich, obviously. Yep. And
well, Osram's really imposing. He's going to go stand over there like, yeah. I'm going to charge you, buddy.
I mean, he can swing... He killed the... Well, Helldiver popped up, and he killed it all by himself to clear the zone. But he's got a little crit decap action. But he just never... His stubby little legs will never carry him over there, even with Energizer. So,
well, even if he gets there.
Yeah. Yeah.
Killing yeah. even a mildly camped Lich is...
Yeah. Not good times.
No.
So, but... I didn't, once he killed the Earthquake, I didn't have any pieces that could kill Lich anymore, which meant, like, it was pretty much just contest and try to score faster. And when that far flag gives 2 points, that's hard to do. So, that was that game. It was a disappointing way to lose when I...
Are you saying you didn't like losing with 5 control points and 56?
With 5 control points and a full army kill, that was not...
I could tell that was boring. Yeah. that's not a reflection on Dan. Like,
no, not at all. No,
he did everything.
He kept playing a game in which I was ahead at the end of the game. Like I was, but he kept playing and he found a way to win the game, and that's good on him.
Yeah, that's credit.
Yeah, but it was not a particularly. It left a bad taste in the mouth to lose in that style. Yeah. So yeah.
So,
yeah.
Nigel, what did you learn at the tournament this weekend? We already talked about how all three of you guys are failures and should all be...
I learned that Anastasia walks 7 inches, not 6. I also learned that you can teleport through flags.
Not teleport, you just pass through.
Yeah, you just pass through.
Yeah.
But, yeah, so I was counting on that extra. But, yeah, my first round was Dan Sammons, who was actually a super fun, classy guy and kind of he's an Eddie player.
Yeah.
And even though I completely crapped the bed, I still had a ton of fun. But I just positioned his turn one. He played Durgan, and he just redlined, ran his Earthbreaker up, and then just like ran literally everybody their max distance forward. Like everybody just ran 12 inches or whatever at me. And Anastasia was like a quarter inch behind the middle flag. And I knew that I had to worry about her, so I played calm with Karchev. I was like, yeah, I'll get you. And I just moved up like 3.5 inches, and I put sidearms up so that I couldn't be knocked down by that dumb Earthbreaker. And then I had the Spriggan hanging out next to him. And then I had the Vanguard next to that, so he couldn't get rid of sidearms with Iris. So I thought I'd had myself set positioned fairly well. And then he was just like on his turn. He moved up Iris, disrupted Beast 09.
This turn, I came over like halfway through this turn, and when I saw the result of what this turn was, I was like...
yeah. He moved up, disrupted Beast 09, and... I was like, well, that sucks. And it got rid of Redline. And my Boom Howlers were sort of straddling the far two. So Karchev was between the left two flags, and Boom Howlers was between the right two flags. And he had Gun Mages opposite the Boom Howlers, and he had Widowmakers opposite the Nis on the left flank. And basically, my positioning was just a smidge rusty, basically. And then, so he ran up Iris, disrupted Beast. Ran Gorman up 12. He was pretty convinced when he ran Gorman 12. Then I was like, oh crap, he's going to try to do the intrigue. And I was like, is he going to like push or you know how's he going to get her in there? And then nope, she just like walked. I was like, god damn it, because like, I had measured at the end, you know, when I was positioning, I measured to that flag and I've got a 10-inch control and I was out of my control to the flag. So I was like, there's no way. But yeah, she just you know she's A, faster than I thought, and B, you can just hop over the flag.
Yeah, that plus one speed got you.
Yeah. So that sucked balls. So I got intrigued. Gorman actually missed Karchev because I was actually hoping he'd hit so I could shield guard it.
Yeah.
And be like, ha-ha! Because Iris, she can get rid of sidearms, but by this time, the Earthbreakers, I think... No, the Earthbreaker hadn't already gone yet. So I still had to be cautious about the range attack, but, like, you know, I don't know. I wasn't, like, going to sweat too hard. But I would actually just let her get rid of sidearms so I could get rid of one of those knockdown shots and then take some of the big damage. I don't know. But he got to have his cake and eat it too. Gorman missed with Black Oil and literally deviated on all three. The Vanguard, the Spriggan,
and Karchev.
That basically blew.
So Beast 09 is disrupted.
He's disrupted and in rough terrain. He's in rough
terrain. Knockdown and rough terrain, right?
Knockdown and rough terrain. And... that was,
The other three guys are all disrupted.
Yeah, when he disrupted me, too, I should have
I think I actually let him do like a little Dan Simmons reverse psychology. He's like, would you like to hyperaggress? And I actually should have, because then it would have put him in a better position. Like, he'd be right on top of her almost. But I just didn't, and I should have. But because his positioning that next turn, because he just lived. So if he could have just like stood up and walked and engaged everybody, or you know, I could have had way better options. Mostly just got in front of Karchev so that Earthbreaker couldn't charge him. But yeah, Earthbreaker. So Karchev has Ground Zero, which is a nice little spell.
Which you can cast while under Black Oil.
Yep. So I was able to just kind of like walk up. I had to make sure I could get in the pocket, and I kind of misplayed my spring into. This is one of those things you have to be like wildly creative in a really bad spot, and you just are going to misplay some stuff. Like, I could have positioned the Spriggan in such a way that I could have gotten, like, Tunis, Iris, Anastasia, and Gorm. I could have got everybody in it. But I backed him up, so I made sure I was trying to eyeball that 2-inch space between Gorman, who I just bulldozed, mm-hmm. and so that Karchev's base could sneak through. I just over-guessed it. So he was ended up being too far away, so I couldn't get Iris and, like, one of the Nis in the Ground Zero. I don't know if that was really critical, because I still had to worry about getting charged by Earthbreaker, but it gave him way too many extra options. So Anastasia DeBray, I wasn't going to get intrigued again. Gorman went away. One of the Nis went away. Iris, like, I, you know, got his Nis down a half, and I killed Silena. And I just ran whatever was left of the Boom Howlers. He just absolutely annihilated my Boom Howlers on his turn without intrigue. Like, the Gun Mages were out of the intrigue range. And those Gun Mages, I mean, he'd got them down to half. With just his unit of Gun Mages, so he was off by, you know, I think I made 2 tough checks or something. But yeah, 7 guys, 5 kills, pretty sweet. And then, so what was left, I was able to just get Boomhowler himself onto the Earthbreaker and one other Boomhowlers, and it was like, do I Rage Howl, or do I go, whatever, Call of Defiance? And I Call of Defiance.
It's good, because you can't run in Rage Howl.
Oh yeah. That's good.
Yeah, that's true. So you played legally. Mm-hmm. Nice work.
Yeah.
Yep.
Well, that's sweet. So I just did that because it's like, I'm going to be engaged and he has to kill me. And it was more important that they prevent the Earthbreaker from coming forward, which he trivially did with Holt, who just aims and hits on sixes. So it's like, boop, get out of here. Get out of here, buddy. And then he charged poor Karchev, who was no longer black oiled, but not camping or anything either.
Yeah. So I didn't realize that was how that game ended. How many times on the day did a Colossal or Gargantuan charge and kill Karchev? Was it just 2?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah. The Dan game was interesting because that was the only game that I just sort of genuinely misplayed and had. It wasn't like math, it wasn't dice, it wasn't whatever. Just Dan beat me. Like, there's no... I just, like, pooched it, and I should have towed the Vanguard up a little bit and just had the Vanguard kill Anastasia or just anything. I could have committed resources to just preventing getting some of that early crap out of there. I just didn't. I tried to get too cute with my positioning. But yeah, like, Josh is referring to my... Like, the rest of the day was me playing in the Sprinkler, and I power slid Beast of Nine plus Spriggan onto basically their caster in all the rest of my games and failed that assassination run.
Twice, right? 2 out of 3?
2 out of 3, yeah. Poor Cray was the only person who succumbed to it.
So what you're saying is that it's bad.
No, it's actually, like, the Grolar, like Josh saw it, it's dice math, it's fantastic. It's just like, what do you do when you miss, when you miss 2 boosted nines and you never crit, and, you know, it's like, what do you do? With Cray, I crit on my first attack with Beast and he just exploded. So then it's like, yay, that happened.
Well, you should get just stationary on that axe then, like you have just Devastation.
I know, exactly. Yeah. I just need to play more Conquest. But, like, the Grolar fixes that, because if you just can hit with one of his 2 boost attacks, they're knocked down, and then Beast just trivially
kills. And Beast doesn't even need to imprint.
Yeah, he just goes over there, gets his full 5 attacks, actually 6 attacks, and actually his fist with red line is still pretty badass. So that was sort of the thing. It's like, I just got to shelf that idea until the Grolar comes out, because it's... The Grolar also solves the problem. I don't get to really feat with Karchev. I'm always power sliding around. So I just need a jack with Relentless Charge that can knock down. Because the other thing that Grolar does is he moves you. So he's got that part of it. So that's huge for opening up lanes or pushing people out from behind walls. Like where Josh saw, I sort of did it pretty expertly. Like, I pushed him out from behind the wall. There's no way he was getting his +2 defense when Beast got there, because, like, the Spriggan... I actually power slid and popped my feet, so I was Pathfinder with Spriggan. Spriggan came over, bulldozed, got him 2 inches, so he, like, went out past the wall. beast engaged, you know. It was like the perfect super money shot. And, yeah. Whoop.
You missed on Wolf. Hit your first two, but whiffed your last two.
Yeah. And he had one, or no, he had two shots, right? And so that was the other one, too. I kind of was like, I don't know if we just assault. I was trying to remap. I did 10 damage with the Spriggan.
Which he transferred.
No, he took that. I was like, oh, you're going to take that. Because it was like a big damage roll. And he took it. And then yeah. I did 6 damage with, I did like 14 damage with Beast's first attack.
Yeah.
And he transferred that. And then I did like 6 with the fist. And he transferred that.
Yeah.
And then I like whiff. And then I hit and he transferred that. Or something like that.
No, you, because you use one to imprint, right?
Yeah.
So you had your two initials.
Yeah, and I had
and
a
you,
free charge.
You missed your final two.
I missed my final two.
Yeah.
If either of those had hit.
He's dead.
He's just dead, yeah. Yeah. It was like dice plus.
Unless he toughs. It was Grim. Yeah, so yeah. He could have toughed.
And that was also why I didn't boost one of the imprinted attacks. Because I guarantee it's dice plus 7. I can't not kill him or force a tough check. But if he toughs, it's like, wah, wah.
Well, I like that. So. Well, one more in the chamber. Yeah. If you can.
Yeah. And I thought 9s was easy enough to hit. But like, but he had transferred those. I thought that he transferred all those to the Mountain King. And I know he's a big badass, but then he took a free strike from Beast to get to Karchev, and I hit him fairly hard. It was like, you know, another 8.
It was firm. It was a firm attack.
Yeah. So I was like,
you know, I think the thing is, I
wonder if we even marked one of those, because I think we just thought his caster was dead as a foregone conclusion. I think we literally just didn't even mark one of those shunts. Yeah. Like, we were just kind of like, whatever, it's time. Just let me finish killing your guy.
I
was like, whiff.
I thought he transferred one to the Impaler.
Oh, did he? Okay.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
Anyway, it doesn't really matter at this point. Here's a lesson I want you to learn, Nigel. Getting excited about playing a list you haven't put on the table at an important tournament.
Hey, after I lost to Dan.
You followed your heart, which is good.
I paid penance. I was like, this is what I get. So I'm just going to play this dumb list the rest of the day. It's going to be like the walk of shame. And I'm just going to, I'm literally going to end every game on 2 regardless. Like, I'm just going to power slide.
Well, as near as I could tell, the reason that you must have failed in the previous games, and part of the reason you failed in this, is that you were not throwing up the horns and shouting, do more! When you popped your feet. Like, I don't, yeah. And it was even kind of, when you finally did it in that game, it was kind of a weak metal total war.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, you're going to be Karchev. You're going to be the man of the machine. You're going to get more metal.
Yeah. It was a brutal long day. The one, too, I played Absalonia, and I did the same. I power slid, and I just, like, whiff on my two attacks. I was like, oh, that sucks. And Absalonia is really bad because she had 3 hit points left, and she had shunted to, like, her beasts were just exploded.
And then she's like,
okay. That whole turn didn't happen. And all my guys, yeah, Karcha's got his. That's great.
Like, so what I've learned from this process is that Nigel accidentally made a really good Sorcha list. And now he's like, I just got to get like janky again. And it'll happen. Like, something else amazing is going to come out of this. And it's just. Just duds every time it's duds.
It's not every time duds. The Vlad Strakov lists are both amazing. They're actually. I was 2-0 with Strakov at Daikon.
Yep.
Yeah, he's actually legit. Mm. And then the Vlad list is pretty good too. It's just a matter of like settling in and owning one of those lists. But yeah, Karchev can't be played until Grolar's out. That's just that. And Grolar actually solves a lot of Cotter problems. Like, we don't have to hit fixers, and he's a hit to hit fixer in like a big way.
The old knockdown.
Yeah. I mean, you could accuse Grigorovich of being a hit fixer, but it's on a dedicated sort of unit type that I don't really enjoy taking anymore. So.
It's not like a warp wolf to hit fixer.
It's not temporal barrier.
That's all that does.
You do have signs importance.
Yeah.
You do have Sorcia's feet.
Hand of fate.
You'll notice the Sorcia is, that's why she's, yeah, because she's got hit fixing, which kind of makes that, like, if Cotter can do that, they're
better. She has Fizzing Grill.
Eris's feet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Eris one's feet.
Nope.
Those are,
I don't like taking those guys. Yeah. I like to hit fixing with Strakov.
You have some troops that are Mat 9, just, yeah.
Uh-huh. Hey, that's miss.
Yeah, interesting.
If Chaos are fighting other Chaosies, it's Miss City.
It's Miss City. That's true.
Do you have ice cages?
Those, I always bring Turnians a lot in a lot of lists. That does not work. That is not the hit fixing.
I went on a mini rant against Turnians in your honor earlier. Yeah,
because you were asleep.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And I was just like, why Turnians? Why does their clouds go away?
Talking about how Butcher 3 is just like craps his pants and dies against Sons of the Tempest.
Yeah. He craps the pants, yeah. Is which one's Sons of the Tempest?
The Six Hunters.
The Six, yeah, yeah. He craps the pants, dies of that. P. Krios, P. Sorsha, P. Vlad, any gun line, you know. Carrier group. I actually hate that on forums there's like this, you know, Connor is so relevant, they got B3. Oh my god, my head explodes every time. Like, he's not relevant. He's just a complete waste of design space. Anyways.
I don't think he's that bad.
He's pretty bad.
I think you're over.
If you get auto beat by something janky that I've made, it's like 100% auto. Like, zero chance of playing a game.
Doesn't your social list auto beat a lot of things?
Well, B3. Any list molded in the form of B3, yeah.
Not Berka.
No, not Berka. Actually, Berka, I might even actually try that big tubby bastard on a big base. I just like just do 10 points and he can't shunt every turn until he dies. He's this big dumb bear runs around.
He does have a turn of stealth.
Mm-hmm.
So it'll be every turn.
Yeah.
And you can always get in with the Tempest.
Yep, that's true.
Get a ton from there.
Yep.
I mean, he's still armor 19, but...
Yeah, but I'm just doing the 10 auto points. We call it a day. I'll see him next turn. He can shunt that death bolt.
I don't think this is a good long-term plan.
It's a good long-term plan.
And then on the after you do it the one time, your whole army is engaged with, like, fen blades and stuff that are feeded on, and you're like,
No way.
So we actually are starting a new segment.
Oh.
Well, I want to know what you think about it. We're going to call it the Jank Tank.
Mm-hmm.
It'll be dojo that really maybe people shouldn't try.
You should always try Jank Tank.
Yeah.
It's the Chuck Isaac way.
But there is a disclaimer at the beginning that you probably shouldn't try Jank Tank.
This is where Nigel can talk about putting Thor with two rock rams.
That's a legit Jank Tank.
If you're going to get janky like that, why wouldn't one of the things that Thor takes be a basher?
You don't really need it in the social list. But the thing about the two Rockhammer Rock Rams, Thor running two Rockhammer Rock Rams, is their threat is extreme because she has boundless charge. So their threat is like really extreme.
Okay.
And he can tune up one of them, and they get free charges.
Uh-huh.
So they're getting...
Wait, why do they... Because of
boundless charge. Yeah, okay. That's his friendly model.
Yeah.
So their threat is like bananas. And then when she pops her feet on like a Colossal, they have... What's the gun has like crit fill out the last column.
Yes.
And it's at double damage.
Catastrophic
at double damage. So if you crit there, then you get in one of them's tuned up, so that might happen. And then you have crit stagger.
Uh-huh.
So you've got these two guys that are coming in with like POW 15s and POW 18s,
yep.
Double damage,
yep.
Charge attacks, plus a second POW 18 each. That's pretty badass.
And wait, how are they getting a second POW 18 each?
Because they're getting free charges, so they're Jack Marshall charge just goes to buying that.
You think they're going to stay within those 9 inches? he's going to move up, he's going to pronto them,
yeah,
and then they're going to charge,
yeah.
And they're not going to be within 9 inches of the Thor.
Oh, they'll be fine. if I have to take a Colossal to just throw him in the general area,
he'll die.
Because you have the old 14 armor, 5 wound, non-tough model.
He's a hard character. Campus Jack Marshall points, and then he'll... it'll work.
All right.
Now, my favorite Jank Tank moment when we were talking last night was, I don't know, when you guys decided that Jakes and a Triumph would be good with Haley 2, which I actually kind of agree with.
Yeah. See, you'll find some gold. You'll mine.
So there are certain casters that you can never be like, this is janky. Like, Haley 2, you can never be like, this is so janky, because Haley 2 is just like, what'd you give me? Okay.
Yeah, but I mean, just all of the abilities.
She might roll her eyes and be like, I don't know what's up with like the accounting department or whatever. It's like dispersing equipment.
They sent me Stormblades and Jakes with Triumph.
But one thing
I guess.
One of the things with those combos, though, is you can tell, even in the sort of theory machine of it, that it solves some problems with her. Like, I can even remember back when I was playing Epic Haley, stealth battle groups and stuff were a problem. There's just things that would be a problem. So having Triumph be able to make two arcane precision shots while also moving 3 inches is...
Or 5 inches with TK.
Yeah, with TK.
Because he can be Energizer.
It's actually pretty powerful in Haley's list because it solves a couple of her really huge problems.
All right.
Also, Sidekick stacks really well with Deceleration.
And it's also funny because it came up because I actually learned it at Gen Con a couple years ago when in my Haley 35-point list. That was the jack I gave her. And I actually had a blast with it. It was, like, really good. And I just was, like, brought it up last night. Like, you know, at 35 points, I used to take Triumph with her, and it was really effective because it just makes this, like, gun base that shoots twice. It's arcane precision. It's high pow. And it's impossible to kill with decel, so you don't have to worry about arcane shield on it. So at 35, you can... And we started thinking about it, like, give the Jake, take we go! Jake's running it was amazing. And then... Yeah, don't give Haley extra focus. That's ridiculous.
I mean, yeah. I've been trying to find the right combo of Jake's and a Jack to go in Haley. I'm not sure that it's Triumph. I think it might just be a defender.
The thing is, the arcane precision is very relevant. Like, you just can remove Tartarus or things that are actually difficult to remove.
He gives you other weird things too, like just Blaster. You know, just in case you ever need it. I mean, it's corner case, but
Dead-eyed Gun Mage is removed.
This is power 15 as well, like normal defender.
What's that?
This is power 15. Yeah.
They got two turns. They'll get it done.
Kill Tartarus?
Yeah.
What?
Wow. That's not my experience. I've not seen Tartarus go down to Dead-Eye Gun Mages.
Dead-Eye Gun Mages, they usually have a snipe, but never brutal damaging, because if they're brutal damaging him, they're 3 inches away. Yeah, they're within 10 inches.
Oh, no, what's he going to do? Forfeit his action and walk at me?
I mean...
the Banes are 2 inches away from him, because he's 8 inches behind the Banes.
Yeah, that's the problem.
We killed them already. We killed them last turn.
I don't know.
I don't play early too. I just know that my Downyellow's gun mages are not
it's Tartarus.
It's Tartarus.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, Tartarus.
Anyway.
Yeah, but then we went we were like in the jank tank till 4 a.m. and we had like siege jank tank, and then we had like multiple we actually had to make like multiple E Haley jank tank lists and then multiple siege jank tanks. And then me, John, and Tom were all dueling jank tanks like simultaneously, like okay, now siege, and we'd all have our phones out and we'd like make a list and then we'd have to hand our phones to Tom so he could like see them all side by side, like the three phones, and we'd be like, okay, very good, and then we had to do our,
it was really awesome.
Yeah, and Tom was super excited. He's like Signar's the best jank tank, like we could just do this till 4 o'clock the next day or whatever.
My favorite was Tom was like, I'm gonna play E Haley with two ironclads.
Yeah. Yep.
He's like, because I'm going to tremor, and then I'm going to TK them out of combat.
Yeah, and it's awesome when you start doing that, because like, then I riffed off his idea. I'm like, well, I like the idea of having two beaters, because the whole point is their feet, and you deliver two beaters.
Yeah, I took your list. I talked about it on this cast.
Oh, did you? And then the Stormclads?
Yeah, I don't know if I built your exact list, but I put the double Stormclad bullet together.
Yep. Did you have the Sword Knights running out? The
yep.
one? Yeah. Yeah, that's legit. I think that would be...
That'd be pretty good.
Yeah.
I think it pairs with my Siege list really well.
Yep. I had to just reach deep into my, like, I hate the Earthbreaker so much dojo that I was just like...
I wonder if these guys figured out that basically I put together solutions for all three of them.
Yep. I was like, I would love to just hit the Earthbreaker with 8 Stormclad attacks, and then everything within 4 inches of that Earthbreaker dies. That would make me so happy. I just like, had to make that list.
And then feed with Haley and do it all again.
Yeah, do it all again.
So much hate for the Earthbreaker. I don't understand it.
You would if you played on the other side of it, buddy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, so my siege list is pretty good against Lich and Krix, and it's pretty good against Meat Mountain.
Yep.
And then this Haley list is pretty good against Josh.
Why do you do these things is my question, because you're never going to play Signar, so all you're doing is putting ammunition in my hands.
Yeah.
Yeah,
and
I know.
Then you regret it later.
I do. It's an idea I had a while ago, but on my siege jank tank, I think the gem was the Thor with the gun, the spray bunnies.
Yeah.
I actually think that's pretty legit.
No, that is really good.
Thor with spray bunnies is how I used to play Thor.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, he was really good.
But it was just with siege, his feet turn, and then you could actually, with Iron Holt, like, make one of those sprays magical, and it's all tuned up.
Yeah.
Spray. I mean, holy crap.
Yeah.
That could be pretty harrowing.
It was good.
Yeah.
It was
sweet, miserable meat mountain. Or I'd love to kill some meat mountain.
That's also what Sons of the Tempest is for.
Yeah.
I like how We just basically equip everybody for beating us.
Yeah.
That's great. It's like every time that I'm like in the first round, I'm just like, God damn it, it's one of John's lists.
You guys inspire me.
Yeah.
I hate losing to you guys, and I do it a lot, so.
How are we on time?
We're well over 2 hours. It was 2 hours, basically, when Chad left.
When Chad jetted.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, this has been a special extended episode of Mies on Minis, episode 182. We'll be back next week with more fun things to talk about. We'll bring another episode of, what, Net Decking for Newbies?
Net Decking for Newbies.
Oh, yeah, Nigel, we started a new segment.
Net Decking for Newbies?
Yeah.
We'll tell you all about it.
Yeah.
All right. So that's all. Have a good time. See you later, everybody. This is Keith.
John.
Josh.
Nigel.
Chad.
'Alright, I got a mic. Everybody else have a mic?
Hello.
Check. Mic check.
You guys sound good.
Mic check.
Awesome. We're preambling, but we can start.
I'm tired.
Yeah, I can understand it. I actually slept from the time I got off work until 2:45.
I got brunch.
Yeah.
Lance called you, but you didn't answer.
I know. I texted him when I woke up.
He was like, yeah, John said you guys had a podcast tomorrow, and he was like, make sure you wake up by 2 or 3 or something like that. I friggin' hate you guys. And I was like, I have to work tomorrow from 6:30 to 6:30.
Yeah.
He's like, oh.
Yeah, people who don't work, like, overnights never, like, they're just like, why are you so lazy waking up late in the evening? And I'm like, why are you so lazy going to bed at, like, you know,
at
10 p.m. when I, like, still have 4 hours of work left out of me? Like, shut up.
4 hours of work at 10 p.m.
Yeah. Actually, usually about 5, including cleaning, but yeah.
10 p.m. is, like, the very beginning of my day.
Yeah.
It's, like, morning.
Yeah.
So I've been watching the newest I don't know if it's the newest. Season 6 of Parks and Recreation.
Mm.
It's just as good.
Is it the one where they start out in...
Start out in London?
Yep, I've yep. And she sends Ron to Lagavulin.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he's got that stupid grin on his face.
Yep. Yep.
I love Ron Swanson.
Indeed. Indeed, Ron Swanson.
Do we have any topics today, or are we just going to talk about tournament all day?
I suppose I could scribble something out.
Talk about the tournament in which Keith and the two of us played in and lost.
That's glorious. I scrambled my way back to like a fifth place finish or something like that.
Yeah, I played the Tots in second round, and all will to fight just left me.
I think we should just talk about the tournament in the pre-ramble. Should be like a bonus.
A bonus?
Well, do we have topics to talk about for the real cast?
I'm excited about... It's sort of a dojo slash spotlight on Signar. I want to talk about Signar in three list formats, because I did... I built three 50-point Signar lists that I love, all of them. And some of them are inspired by other people's lists. Like, one is basically a carbon copy of Craig's, but... It's pretty sweet.
We were in the Signar dojo last night.
Yes.
No, I mean like after.
Oh, after?
Me, Nigel, and Tom. Can you imagine how that went?
Nigel, yeah, we'll talk about this, but Nigel has some really stupid ideas. Anyway, I'll share them with you because it also carries over into Mercenaries.
All right.
There.
I assume there's a lot of guest on Colossals going on.
No, this is Thor with heavies.
Okay.
Heavies.
I
was all in on Scorn now.
He is. But we just got in the Signar dojo. We had a lot of fun. I had an idea.
Did you see Tom's post, like, his post about, like, going back to, like, qualified. Now I'm going back to Scorn. And everyone was like, we'll wave the banner for Scorn. And he was like, no, that's Trevor. Trevor's the banner waver. And Trevor's like, no. He's like, I'm interested to see all your hot new dojo, though. And Tom was like, it's mostly just more Karn and Makeda, too.
Oh, man.
Perfect.
That's a pretty good caster.
Is there an outlet back there?
There is outlets all over.
Not playing Mullet, Karn, and Makeda 2 in Scorn is like not playing the Earthbreaker and Thor and Mercenaries. You just don't do it.
They're on the counter.
You just don't do it.
I had an idea for a segment. I wanted to see what you guys thought.
Yeah.
A lot of times we talk about...
I hate it. Continue.
We talk about like tournament pairs that we're playing right now.
Yeah.
And sometimes I feel like they're more suited to our play styles or maybe a little more advanced or complicated.
Okay.
And I thought a new player segment would be fun to take straightforward, powerful casters.
Uh-huh.
To help people get a leg up when they're starting the tournament grind.
How to build easy lists.
Easy lists that are powerful so that they can go to tournaments and talk about the matchups for every faction. So we could do one for every faction. For example, Lilith 2 is not terribly difficult to play well.
Yeah.
And I think she's a good starting Legion competitive caster for somebody to start with, dipping their toe in. Whereas Vale 1 is a very difficult caster to play well. Even though both are powerful, but we could start steering new players to maybe some a little more straightforward stuff. To help them just get a leg up in tournaments, because it's hard enough out there as it is. So I thought it might be kind of fun to build a list pair, talk about matchups for each list, and try to build like just a powerful list pair with a little bit more straightforward casters.
Sure. We might have some disagreement about which list or which things are straightforward and powerful, but I mean that could be an interesting discussion.
Yeah, that might be interesting too. And I just thought it'd be a fun exercise to like if I was a new player. And I wanted to break into the competitive scene and just learn about playing in tournaments. Because there's so much more to playing in tournaments than just the nuts and bolts of playing the game. There's, you know, figuring out how to eat and, like, managing all the tournament stuff that's going on around you.
Yeah.
And so getting that experience without getting too demoralized. Like, playing in tournaments can be pretty demoralizing.
What?
Yeah. Yeah, I was going to call Steven Groom yesterday. Get the suicide watch started. I felt pretty bad for you guys, which is why I just stayed away from both of you. I was like,
I was fine.
Yeah.
Most of the day. That's probably why I'm so bad now. It's like I don't fume the way I used to.
You were angry for a little while.
The time when I walked over and talked to you,
Well, immediately after the game, I was sitting there staring at my board for a while, but I always do that. Like, people that talk to me right after a loss are just dumb. You gotta give me, 20 minutes.
Just dumb.
Yeah, that's what I was talking about.
There was like 10 minutes until the next round, and John was like, I don't know if Keith's dropping or not.
Yeah.
I'm the assistant, so I'll go find out.
Well,
yeah, I said Chad.
I'll go stick my head in that line.
Chad, just put your head between his jaws. He won't bite down, I promise.
I was not fine. I was trying to be fine, but then, like, I went to work last night and bit the head off of, like, three people in a row, and Whitney was like, what's wrong with you? And I was like, I guess I'm still grumpy about my first game. I didn't say this to her, obviously. Like, I guess I'm still grumpy about how I lost my first game.
So we can talk about, at least in my game, we can revisit the topic of identifying why you lost, even though, and finding ways around it, despite, like, even if things could easily have gone your way, there are usually still ways to get it, to recover, despite, like, unfortunate circumstances.
Yeah.
That guy played hard for scenario. He scored 22 scenario points in 5 rounds,
right,
which is ridiculous.
That's a lot.
Yeah, which is why I got third. I mean,
yeah. Oh, the guy that Keith lost to?
Yeah. 22 scenario points, dude. Like, in 5 rounds, is it's not 3 off perfect.
It's not 25 scenario points in 5 rounds.
How many times have you done that? 22.
I have, in a tournament, scored 5 scenario points every time I played my Gorton list. I have done that before.
Yeah.
I have gotten 25 scenario points in a tournament. When I was playing...
Denny 2?
Denny 2.
Elitch and Denny 2.
Yeah.
So you're saying you got X minus 5 tournament points where the round, where X is the number of rounds?
Yeah.
Period.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Gorton's pretty good. It's just not an easy thing to do. So.
Right, so that's not the most exciting pre-ramble of all time, but I don't think we're in a rambly mood.
No, we're all really tired. I don't know. I was up until 3:30, and I think we should have a new dojo segment.
Do you have new dojo? I mean, obviously Keith does.
We have dojo, which is like normal fun stuff, and then I think we should have a segment called Jank Tank, which is like, look, use this stuff at your own peril. It's fun, interesting interactions.
Oh, I see what you mean by new dojo thing. Okay.
Yeah.
Like, right. I feel like we have to wake Nigel up if we want to do the jank.
Yeah.
Because he's like the master of the jank tank.
Oh, my God. You should have heard some of the stuff we were talking about last night. At one time, we were like, well, let's see, an Avenger with marshaled by gun mages, so it was snipe-shotted, plus rangers and a master gunner equals rad 8. Range.
Right. All you have to do is put in all the things that make Signar so accurate that they can't hardly miss to knock something down so you can't hardly miss.
That's good.
Range knockdown is powerful. There's things you could do with it. I don't know. It was just interesting, some of the interactions we were talking about.
Range knockdown is powerful.
Yeah.
I will agree with that statement.
Yeah. We also, like, here's something we talked about last night that we got really excited about, which is... playing Haley 2 with Triumph on a Jakes, which sounds kind of weird, but
that's janky.
Triumph has arcane precision, so it allows you to just like, and with 2 shots a turn, you can just be like, Tartarus, get out of here. You know, all of those like hard to kill larger solos. And then with Sidekick and Deceleration, like, Triumph is kind of an asshole. I mean, like, how do you deal with him?
I guess.
Put some stuff in melee with him, and then he just sort of, like... I guess he can take free strikes, but he can't shoot stealth stuff anymore.
Well, you have telekinesis and energizer, so you can move Triumph all over the place and get shots on lots of really, like, high-value solos. Like, you could make that module pay for itself. But it was just interesting, because Triumph is a model that's never used. And then Sidekick, I mean, energizer, TK... Sidekick all really stack with him pretty well, and arcane precision gives Haley something that Signar doesn't normally have,
unless they play in the Black 13th,
right? But the Black 13th is even a little different. You have to get Firebeacon there, which is not always easy.
Yeah. Or Siege. So,
right, well, Siege is not in the Haley list.
No, that's true. That's true.
But I don't know, like, as soon as you say Triumph plus Jakes, immediately people are like, Well, that's just stupid.
I want to play a format where everyone is allowed to take a secondary caster in their list as just a super solo. All they can do is play as a super solo.
That could be fun.
Just a two-caster game?
It's a two-caster game, I guess.
But it can't have a battle group?
It has no battle group.
Ah.
Seems like it's better for War Machine than Hordes.
Probably. Almost certainly.
Josh?
This format seems flawed.
Unless you...
Newsflash, Josh Maxson doesn't care about Hordes.
God damn it.
I actually have some dojo. I built...
Hordes people.
Hordes people.
Hey, some of my best friends are Hordes people.
What does that mean?
I built Signar lists last night. I built Crix lists, too. Crix ones I wasn't as happy with. Signar lists I'm really happy with.
I built one Gore Shape 3 list that I'm happy with, and three Signar lists that I'm happy with. Maybe some tweaks, but...